It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to talk with Philip Matera, research director over at Good Jobs First, about this, what we were talking about last night. These states who are doing this rearranging of the deck chairs on the Titanic, shifting manufacturing jobs across states, handing out millions and millions of dollars in tax money to these corporations. And for what? It's a zero-sum game. You're moving jobs from Carlisle to Tennessee. You're moving them from Ohio to South Carolina. You're not creating jobs. You're just shuffling them around. And in the process, what you get some businesses who put a little coin in their pocket. We're going to talk about that and why it's a bad idea. I think it's a horrible idea and something Congress has to deal with. Also, Les Leopold, author, who writes over at Alternet, his piece, Hedge Fund Gamblers Earn the Same in 1 Hour as a Middle Class Household Makes in Over 47 Years. It'll be interesting to talk to him and see what his thoughts on the hedge fund managers are. And Judy Pigott, she is an author and co-founder of Personal Safety Nets. She lives in Seattle, and she's one of these folks who is talking about, you need to start taxing me. I'm a rich person. Tax me. You know, her family wealth came from manufacturing. They were the Peterbilt truck people, the Kenworth truck people. These were, you know, manufacturing jobs, created a whole bunch of money. Her relatives, her parents left her a boatload of cash. And she's saying, you know what? They couldn't have done it if it weren't for public investment, especially with trucks. I mean, you know, the family is a truck industry. Without the highway system, it'd be kind of interesting. Anyway, today, congratulations, is the 100th day of this Congress. And I guess the big question is, what have they done? they did get that big bipartisan vote through, passed today. You know, they did their thing last Friday. They got the vote through, but they had 59 T-Twizzlers who defected from the Republican Party. So Boehner's got himself a real problem. But here on the 100th day, I guess the question is, what have they done? And the only thing I can keep thinking of is crickets chirping, because there's nothing. Really, absolutely nothing. I guess one accomplishment is that one of the Republicans who resigned after getting caught, you know, trying to cheat on his wife, he didn't actually do it. We don't actually have confirmation that he was just trying, and he got caught. He resigned. So there's an accomplishment. They promised jobs. Remember that? Jobs, jobs, jobs. That's what the American people sent us here for. Jobs, jobs, jobs. Not one bill pushing any job creation. In fact, what they've done is they've pushed policies that are going to cost us a million jobs. And I don't know if you saw USA Today, but they published some labor data pointing out the fact that in this country right now, we have the fewest number of people working than we've had in 30 years. It's just about 45% of the population has jobs. And, of course, no big surprise, Mississippi was the lowest state with population to have jobs. California and Arizona were also down near the bottom, where just over 37% of the people had jobs. North Dakota had the highest number with close to 56%. But here, you know, this is the lowest number since 1983. I got to tell you, scary times. Now, the highest peak since then was the year 2000. You know, when things were pretty good. You know, people were working. And then Bush came in, handed off a whole bunch of money. So what else have the Republicans done for us? Well, healthcare, right? Healthcare? You remember the healthcare thing? I guess if you call destroying Medicare a good thing, that would be a good thing. The only problem with that is the people who want to destroy healthcare, their own voters, the citizens who voted for them, oppose what they're doing. Seems kind of backwards. They promise they're going to repeal that healthcare bill. And they knew they couldn't. The Grand Pledge, where they made all those flowery pledges. Remember that? The 48 pages with 27 pages of pictures? Color glossy, smiling white people. I think there were like four or five black faces in the whole catalog. But 21 pages of words, most of which were cut and paste, written by a lobbyist. So no surprise there. The Republicans, again, having someone else do their work. And it makes sense to me that you see all these governors across the country and you see the Republicans wanting to slash Pell Grants and slash education, slash college. It doesn't make any, it's no surprise. I mean, stop and think. They had a lobbyist write their pledge. They don't believe in education because they had somebody else do it for them, evidently. Your kids don't mean anything to them. So slash that off, cut them off at the knees. We don't need education, slash burn. They should learn the hard knocks, learn the hard way out on the streets. Energy policy, have they done anything on energy? I mean, drill, baby, drill is not a plan. I just don't think that's it. There's no vision there. There's no leaderships. There's really nothing. What's interesting is you've got the Republicans who are kind of pointing their fingers at the Democrats, especially on the health care front, saying, well, you don't have a plan. You don't have a plan to save Medicare. Sorry. The Democrats brought us Medicare, you dimwits. On infrastructure, you stop and think about infrastructure. Have they done anything? I mean, if for energy policy, drill, baby, drill is not the plan, I don't think crumble, baby, crumble is the plan either, because our infrastructure is falling down around us. And they've done nothing for that. Their answer? Tax cuts. Their answer? Cut spending. I'm sorry, I don't remember the last time a tax cut built a bridge. I'm not quite sure when a tax cut paved the road outside my house. You come into Harrisburg here down 2nd Street, this road is horrible. The infrastructure in this country is dilapidated, it's decaying, it's crumbling underneath our feet, and we just seem to be, I don't know, blissfully ignorant, willfully unaware, I don't know. But you've got politicians who've got their heads right up their keisters and don't want to. It must be that they don't want to invest in this country. Maybe it is the short-term political gains that they get by having this illusion that we're cutting taxes and that somehow we're able to still function. But if you look at our debt, all of these tax cuts haven't helped us. All it's done is put us in crisis mode, right where they wanted us. Again, I go back to Naomi Klein's book, and it's a long book, but it's spot on. They believe in the shock doctrine. They believe in creating massive crisis so that you get people like you and me going, well, gee, there's a crisis. We need to all chip in and do what Americans do. Come to the rescue. Come to the aid when somebody's down, when somebody needs help. That's just who we are. And they take advantage of that because they know that's who we are. And they know that's what we're willing to do. We're going to tighten our belts so our kids don't have to suffer. And we're going to struggle and we're going to have the store brand mac and cheese instead of something else. They know that. And they take advantage of it. Which is why they keep pushing this frame. Oh, we're broke. We're broke. We're broke. We're not broke. We're not broke. And what's amazing to me, the people who brought us, we're going to have oversight. We're going to have accountability. Look what they're doing. They're defunding government. They're defunding data.gov, which was supposed to be the place where everything went. All the information was supposed to go to this website, and people could go to one place, one simple place, get the information. Well, they're defunding it. Isn't that beautiful? You know, I got to be honest. You know, someone asked if I remembered when those evil teachers and those greedy public workers and Planned Parenthood and public radio and PBS crashed the stock market. Remember when they did that? Remember when those greedy teachers and the public employees wiped out half our 401ks? Remember when those Planned Parenthood people and public radio and PBS took all that TARP money? Remember that? You remember how those teachers spilled all that oil in the Gulf of Mexico and then gave those public workers all those billions in bonuses? Remember that? Yeah, me neither. I don't remember that. What I remember is a bunch of banksters. And now we've allowed them to rob the bank. And who are we blaming? We're blaming the teachers and the public sector workers. We're blaming Planned Parenthood and PBS. And what have they done? What have they done on their watch? Well, what they've done is they've given our wealth away. They've given it to the multinational corporations. They've given it to their big campaign donors. And, you know, last night I kind of went off the deep end talking about this ESAB welding company. They announced that they were going to close a plant near where I lived in Cleveland, and they were moving this plant that had been there since 1940, been a part of that community, had dedicated workers. They're moving that to South Carolina. Why? Well, because, as they said, South Carolina offered a better deal. So those 120 workers, those loyal, dedicated, hardworking Ohio workers, they're going to get their 60-day notice before they get canned and kicked to the street like trash. And they're not going to get that 60-day notice because ESOP is this wonderful company who cares about their employees. No, they're going to get it because it's the law. And that's the only reason. I guarantee you, if the law wasn't there, they would do like the Indianapolis Colts did. They would sneak out of town. They would sneak out of Baltimore like thieves in the night. And I look at the fact that Ohio, who is cutting billions into education, they're cutting social programs, they're stealing wages from public workers, they're stealing wages from teachers, and they're giving $56 million to Diebold to build another plant. They're giving $93.5 million to a greeting card company in the hopes that, you won't go to Illinois. I mean, stop and think about this for a while. This beggar thy neighbor economic development's got to stop. And, you know, at some point I think we're going to wake up. I hope. I hope that we'll learn from Justice Benjamin Cardozo. He was a Supreme Court justice back in 1934. Said the Constitution was framed upon the theory that the peoples of the several states must sink or swim together, and that in the long run, prosperity and salvation are in union, not division. So this beggar thy neighbor, I'm going to steal from you, doesn't work. It's not going to help us. Remember back when the Rams left Los Angeles to go to St. Louis? Cost the taxpayers of St. Louis $750 million. Remember back in the 70s when Volkswagen wanted to build a plant here? Cost the state of Pennsylvania $71 million, and they never came close to what they promised. Yet we still keep hearing it being pushed by the corporatists. When Walmart comes to town here in Pennsylvania, Walmart has cost the state of Pennsylvania almost $27 million. Because we give them all tax breaks and we give them land. We give them all the things that they want. And why? Because we hope that they'll create jobs. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Philip Matera, Research Director at Good Jobs First, goodjobsfirst.org. Stick around. We're right back after this. I got a picture in my pocket of the lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat, it is my business hat. I'm up to 1 a.m., I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission. The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO says President Obama's promise Wednesday that he wouldn't follow the Republican radical fiscal agenda is an essential commitment for a secure economic future for working Americans. And AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the labor movement is dead set against any cuts to Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid, regardless of who proposes them. The Labor Federation says the nation's economic focus must be on job creation, and the AFL-CIO says Republicans are instead intent on delivering a massive tax cut to the already rich, and they want the middle class and the poor to pay for it. Labor says the truth is we can't have an honest conversation about the deficit without returning fairness to the system, and that means addressing the $100 billion a year in Bush tax cuts for the rich that the nation can't afford. The Paycheck Fairness Act is needed more than ever if women are to erase the still considerable gender wage gap. That's according to the National Partnership for Women and Families, who says that a new study reveals that on average, full-time working women are paid $10,662 less per year than their male counterparts. At the current rate that the gender wage gap has been closing, women won't earn the same as men until 2058. Louisiana is home to the nation's second-largest natural gas discovery. It's located in the north in the Haynesville area near the border with Arkansas. Workers Independent News spoke with the Louisiana Budget Project's Ed Ashworth about this deposit and how it's affecting the state's treasury.
Black gold, oil and gas, is one of the backbones of Louisiana's economy. Like many states, though, Louisiana is facing a budget crunch. Ed Ashworth of the Louisiana Budget Project says that tax breaks given to big oil are a significant piece of this equation.
We have approximately 441 tax exemptions that cost the state about $7 billion a year. One of the large exemptions that we suggested needs more analysis and review is the tax exemption for oil and gas companies for horizontal wells that are drilled.
According to Ashworth, a nonpartisan fiscal watchdog says that Louisiana will lose 80% of the value of the Haynesville wells.
We've also got an incentive program of the exempting for 2 years from severance taxes all the wells that are drilled horizontally, which all the Haynesville wells will be drilled. That is costing us approximately $190 million a year now.
Zoe Sullivan, Workers Independent News, New Orleans.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and by the National Association of Letter Carriers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.com.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, we keep hearing this frame. We keep hearing the frame that we need to be more business friendly. You know, like they are in Colombia. You know, where they can take trade unionists up in a plane and pitch them out or pull people off a bus and shoot them in the head. You know, business friendly. Good solid business practices. Well, here at home, they're not quite that blatant. So taking the business friendly frame to the next step, filmmaker Morgan Spurlock, he has purchased for $25,000, the naming rights to the city of Altoona, the new name of the city formerly known as Altoona, Pennsylvania, for the next 2 months is going to be Palm Wonderful Presents the Greatest Movie Ever Sold. So I guess everything is for sale. If you remember last night, we were talking about this ESOP thing, and I mentioned it in the opening. They're going to close a plant in Ohio, been there since 1940, move it to South Carolina. Why? Money. Diebold's going to get $56 million from a state that's cutting $1 billion to education. A greeting card company is going to get $93.5 million from a state who's cutting $1 billion from education. And you wonder why. They call it economic development. I call it getting ripped off. That's why I've asked Peter Matera to come talk to us. He's research director of Good Jobs First. He's also the director of the Corporate Research Project over there. Goodjobsfirst.org is their website. Philip, thanks for taking time for me.
Happy to do so.
You know, I look at this and, you know, the fact that, in Ohio, they're cutting $1 billion from education, yet they're going to hand out to two companies over almost $150 million in the hopes that they'll stay.
Well, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it goes on all the time, and the state and local governments overall are giving out something like $70 billion a year in these so-called incentives to companies to create jobs. And there really are two problems with this. One is that, you know, this is a big burden on the budgets of state and local governments, especially at a time like now when they're still, you know, kind of reeling from the economic crisis, you know, and tax receipts are so low. The other problem is that these companies often don't create jobs after they've gotten the big tax breaks. So communities have, you know, lost all that revenue and they have nothing to show for it. And, you know, companies just, you know, then come back and play the game over and over again.
Yeah, I look here in our backyard. A company was in the Carlisle area where I lived 93 years. The state of Tennessee offered them $34 million. They pulled up stake, hightailed it down to Tennessee. They didn't create any more jobs. It was a zero-sum game for the country. But you just stole it from one state and gave it to another, kind of like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah, and exactly. And what's amazing is that no matter how many times you kind of point this out, you know, that companies are playing this game, you know, public officials seem to get intimidated into, you know, giving these subsidy packages, you know, over and over again.
You know, and here's my question, I guess, then. Because some people say, well, you know, give these tax breaks out, you give this incentive out, and it's going to create jobs. You know, and I keep saying, well, when's the payoff? Because where I grew up in Cleveland, we had a mayor who became Senator Voinovich. He gave out all these tax abatements, 25-year tax abatements, free energy, brought all these jobs in, and as soon as all that stuff was gone, they went somewhere else.
Yeah, well, one way to deal with it is to put some strings on the money. I mean, the best thing is not to give out these subsidies in the first place, except under very, you know, special circumstances. But if you are going to give the money out, you know, put some strings on it. So if the company does not deliver, you know, you could try to get that, you know, those subsidies back. I mean, these are called clawbacks.
Right.
And, you know, slowly, you know, more state and local governments are adopting this practice. But there's still a long way to go to make these things accountable.
I made the statement last night that I think Congress has to act and has to use the Commerce Clause. And, you know, I got some people who disagreed, said that the Congress doesn't have the power to regulate commerce across interstate lines. And I think that Congress should step in and stop this beggar thy neighbor economic development and let people compete on who has the best infrastructure, who has the best educational system. I think that's the way to go instead of who's willing to dig into their pockets and mortgage their future.
Well, I agree. Otherwise, it's kind of a race to the bottom because, you know, different communities end up competing against one another, offering bigger and bigger subsidy packages. And then what they find over time is that, you know, either the jobs haven't been created or in those situations where, you know, there is an improvement in employment, the loss in tax revenue is so severe that the government just can't provide basic services. And the hypocrisy of companies about this is really extraordinary. You know, we did a little report on our website at Good Jobs First recently about a few of the companies that play this game a lot. And one of them is Intel, you know, the big semiconductor company.
Right.
And they've gotten enormous subsidies, you know, in states like Arizona, New Mexico, Oregon. And, you know, what often happens as a result of these subsidies is that a lot of money that should have gone to education, you know, gets diverted to the company. Well, recently, the former CEO of Intel was complaining about the poor condition of the educational system in Arizona.
You got to be kidding me.
Right, not acknowledging, you know, that his company is largely to blame for that by taking millions of dollars out of that system, you know, taking it in the form of tax breaks.
Well, you know, I ask, how has this happened? I mean, you know, I had this conversation with my grandmother, who is 82 years old. And she said, you know, they were talking about IKEA and all the working conditions, and my grandmother was shocked that the workers were having to deal with the situations that they were and that the people put up with it, because she was saying in her generation that didn't happen. So, you know, my friends are talking about how do we make states more business friendly? How do we make it more enticing for businesses to come and exploit our tax code and exploit our working laws? Is it a change in mentality? I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, I think it's the cumulative effect of, you know, the weakening of the labor movement and kind of an emboldening of the corporate world. You know, they have this sense of entitlement now. And, you know, they feel that if they're going to invest, you know, in some place, they should be rewarded handsomely, you know, for doing that. And they should get tax breaks. I mean, there are a lot of corporate executives now who believe that they really, that companies should not pay any income taxes.
Yeah, I've heard enough of that.
Yeah, I mean, you've got, you know, the head of Honeywell, you know, which is involved in this lockout of workers in Illinois.
Yep, we've had him on the program a number of times.
Yeah, the CEO of Honeywell, you know, is going around saying, oh, you know, companies should not pay any corporate income taxes. You know, they have this whole line about, you know, that it just gets passed along to the consumer. And, or they say that, you know, what you should really do, you know, tax the shareholders and, you know, tax the people who get dividends. But the problem is you've got people in Congress who don't want to tax rich people. And so if you don't tax companies and you don't tax rich people, who's going to end up paying for everything?
Yeah, I mean, I'm completely stopped in my tracks when we're talking about giving tens of millions, and in some cases hundreds of millions of dollars to these corporations, but we don't have a tax base to be giving it to them. So we're actually, I guess, borrowing it to give to them in the hopes that maybe we might get some of it back. It seems insane.
Yeah. And these are the same companies that are claiming that they are citizens and they are people and they have rights, you know, rights to influence the political process, yet they don't seem to have any obligations, you know, any obligations to help pay for society.
Right. You know, I look at some of these things in Ohio that I was talking about earlier. A greeting card place getting $93.5 million from the state. Couldn't that $93.5 million been put to better use? Couldn't we have allocated those resources just a little bit better?
Yeah, well. Well, we put out a report at Good Jobs First called Slashing Subsidies, Bolstering Budgets. And, you know, it's at free at our website, goodjobsfirst.org. And, you know, we looked at a number of these subsidy programs around the country that are costing states large amounts of money. And, you know, they're just not delivering. Yet business keeps on fighting for them. And in California now, there's been an attempt by, you know, Governor Jerry Brown there to abolish this program called Enterprise Zones, which costs huge amounts of money each year. Basically, everybody agrees that it's a failure in terms of job creation. And for a while, it looks like, you know, the legislature there was going to abolish it. But then the corporate lobbyists, you know, got to work, and now there seems to be a stalemate. And in all likelihood, that program and all those, you know, billions of dollars that are going to corporations are, you know, it's just going to stay in place.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Here's the problem with that. If a state, like say, let's say Pennsylvania decided we're not giving corporations any more money, they can leave if they want, every other state around us would steal it. That's why I say I do believe the federal government has to step in and put a stop. They have to be the adult in this country and put a stop to this. And yet I'm not seeing any movement. In fact, we had one of the congressmen on from this area who was, he just loved the idea that, you know, businesses were moving around and it was good for business.
Yeah, well, you know, Good Jobs First certainly you know, made the same argument, you know, over the years. And there was even an attempt to get the Supreme Court to, you know, to basically rule against, you know, what's often called the war among the states, the economic war among the states. And they basically avoided the issue. They, you know, they basically said that the group that brought the lawsuit didn't have standing to bring it. You know, they didn't have the right to bring it. So they didn't really decide the issue, but even before that case was decided, there were these moves in Congress to pass legislation that would say that, well, even if the Supreme Court, you know, outlaws this war among the states, you know, we're going to pass legislation to basically recreate it.
Just to rewrite the Constitution there.
Exactly.
Just rewrite it. And what's interesting to me is, and this is where I try to reach out to my Tea Party friends who, you know, most of them that I know love to, you know, talk about the Constitution, even though I don't think they've ever read it. You know, they love the 10th Amendment. And I keep trying to explain to them that this is part of the reason why it's in our, corporate controlled media. This is the reason that's pushed out there so often to keep states competing against each other so that, well, business can pit them against each other.
Yeah. I mean, occasionally, you know, states surprise you, like the fact that Vermont is, you know, talking about creating a, you know, a single-payer health care plan. So sometimes states, you know, can lead the way, but unfortunately these days it's much more of a race to the bottom.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at Illinois. Illinois raised taxes, said, you know what, we need to raise some revenue to keep the doors open. And what's the first thing Wisconsin does? Puts up a big sign in Illinois saying, come to Wisconsin, we're open for business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just plain nuts. Last question. Do you see any movement on this, or are we stuck with this?
Well, there are some signs that, public officials in some places are realizing the insanity of all these giveaways. You know, one area where there's been some improvement has been with film tax credits. You know, a lot of states have just gone crazy in recent years, giving away large amounts of money to film production companies, you know, for what are essentially, you know, short-term jobs. In some states, they're starting to cut back on that. There recently was an agreement announced among some of the public officials and large businesses in Kansas City to kind of call a truce in this kind of crazy competition that's been going on between Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas City, Kansas, in terms of poaching jobs from one another. But on the whole, it's a dismal picture, and corporations are calling the shots in most cases.
So at the end, they win, we lose.
Unfortunately, we got to keep on fighting.
Absolutely. Philip Matera, I appreciate your time. Research Director of Good Jobs First, goodjobsfirst.org. There's a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Philip, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
I enjoyed it. Bye.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show.
People of today are so tired of the lust. Their argument for freedom is how much will it cost? So what's it all about? It's money, work it out. Money, all around. Seems to die before it drags you down. Now, action of crime, see the sign. Hungry jungle hunters with one-armed bandit eyes. Mother Nature's army retreats to hide and cry. So what's it all about?
We're smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show. The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
If you want to know how the economy is doing, don't bother checking the Dow Jones average or tracking the unemployment numbers. Instead, consult the spiritualists, not the tarot card readers or those who have extrasensory perception and commune with the supernatural, but the people of crass commerce who deal in liquid spirits, i.e., booze. Despite our nation's relentless and depressing jobless recovery, or perhaps because of it, spirits are on the rise. Overall sales of liquor were flat during the Great Recession, but popped up by 2.3% last year to a total of more than $19 billion. Within that general number, however, lies a more telling economic indicator. Consumer spending on the cheaper stuff is down by nearly 2%, while the super premium goods had an 11% hike in sales in 2010. This sales data is consistent with the ongoing decline in working people's incomes. They're in a downward spiral that leaves them shopping for even cheaper buzzes than two-buck chuck, even as the affluent few are trading up to single malt scotches and boutique bourbons. Then there are the imbibers at the tippy top of America's economy, the Wall Street bonus babies and your billionaire class. They enjoy a constant liquidity, showing few ups and downs on the booze index because they're always rich. These swells buy spirits from the locked cabinets of exclusive liquor dealers, taking home a case of, say, the 2005 Domaine de la Romanée Conti. It's $4,000 a bottle. Perhaps the redundant use of the name Romanée Conti doubles its price, but if you have to ask what it costs, you're in the wrong zip code. This is Jim Hightower saying, yeah, times are hard for most folks with no relief in sight, but I'm sure that you take great comfort in knowing that those at the top are always in high spirits, don't you?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.com.
The man who sends the investor class diving through their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance, and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. You can also email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. I think I figured it out. The GOP plan. Energy, it's drill, baby, drill. Infrastructure, crumble, baby, crumble. And healthcare, die, baby, die. There you go. Very simple, bumper slogan-y, good campaign stuff. Right there. Right there. I think that's going to be the new 2012, Palin-Santorum 2012. Let's go to Ike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Ike?
Hey, all right. Well, I figured I'd call you from down here in the deep, dark south, Charleston, South Carolina. Yeah, I can tell you all about the dirty business deals and the big bowl full of crapioca pudding they keep trying to feed these people, and they eat it up with a spoon.
Oh, they use spoons down in South Carolina?
Well, actually, sporks, but, yeah, something close.
I'm just kidding.
I'm not. I think it's totally disgusting, you know. The Southern man is just flat out, and I don't care who hears it, I think they're idiots. I think they're ignorant. I think they don't know any better. I think that they have some kind of twisted view of not being able to value what their labor is worth, and they think that they're just destined to be a bunch of dumb, poor people. Yeah, you look at South Carolina, man. Our roads are crumbling. Our schools aren't worth a twit. And we've got people like Boeing coming in here. The state government gave them $750 million right off.
Yep.
They stuck us with $155 million worth of road improvements that we have to pay. They're talking about, and they busted the machinist union, so you can't, you know, have a union job out there. But, I'll give you an example. There's ads in the paper now. You want to go work in a warehouse? Oh, okay. How about $8 an hour? Well, that's what they're paying. You know, they consider that to be a good job, I suppose.
But up here, what we keep hearing here is though, you know, yeah, it's only $8 an hour, but that's down there where $8 an hour is like living like a king.
Oh, please. Let me tell you something. We spend just as much on groceries. We spend just as much on fuel. And don't even get me started on the idea, well, you know, you don't have to pay for all the heat in the wintertime and da 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 da. You know, we pay a hell of a lot more for our air conditioner in the summer, too, and our summers last a lot longer than they do up there.
Yep.
I've lived all over the country. I've lived in different places in the world. And I'm not stupid. I've come to understand what the game is, and this is the way the game works. Any old timer that's ever worked a farm will tell you, if you've got a problem with the mule plowing the field, this is what you do. You get a stick, and you hang a nice fat carrot off of it. Now, here's your trick. You hang the carrot so it's not too far away, because if it's too far away from his nose, he won't move. If you get it too close and he gets a bite of it and can eat it, then he won't move. But if you keep it just the right distance away, he'll chase that carrot all day long and plow your field.
Welcome to the American workforce.
That's exactly the way they roll. And, you know, listen. One other thing, too, when you come to infrastructure, you know, people need to be reminded out there, you people have got to realize anywhere between 30 to 50,000 of us a year are killed on these damn roads. So, you know, you want to chinch your money and keep chinching money on roads. That's the number one way that you're going to wind up dead in the first place. You need to improve your roads. You don't need to be letting them go to pot, you know, unless we want to see more of what happened in Minneapolis and just let the bridges collapse.
I think of that every day when I go over the bridge here into Harrisburg. Every day I think of that.
Brother, look at the bridges here in South Carolina. We've got so many of them that are decrepit. It'll make you think twice before you want to go over a bridge here. But as far as what you're saying about this corporate deck chair stuff going on, yeah, you're right. You know, and we haven't seen any major corporate enforcement by the feds in a long, long time since I guess I'd have to go back to FDR, whether it's breaking of trust, you know, the antitrust stuff that goes on, which the insurance companies are in bad need of. But not only that, but, you know, interstate commerce is completely out of hand, and they do have a constitutional obligation to deal with it, and they're just not. So
Yeah, because the American people keep telling them, Mike, create jobs. We want to create jobs. So they've got this frame. We need to be business friendly. So they get to have their ceremonies, and Nikki Haley with really, I think a great porn name. She gets to have a big press conference saying, look what I'm doing as governor. I'm bringing jobs. And it's good for campaign contributions. It's good for votes. Until we break that mold, I don't see this stopping.
Well, just remember this. In the state of South Carolina, the governor has no power. That's why this last governor who ran off to the Appalachian Trail, yuck, you know, it really came down to nothing. The way the government's set here, it's the legislature that runs this thing. And we've got some old-time families. One name that comes to mind is Limehouse, Chip Limehouse. He owns one of the biggest construction and road-building companies in the state. You know, his family goes way back. The people that are in power here are the colonialists that came here originally. I mean, I'm serious. That's how deep the roots are and how much power they wield.
It's the old money.
The good old boys, yeah, definitely. But I'll let everybody know, and I'll say it again and again and again. I don't care whether you're talking about here, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi. I've been in all those states. Arkansas, I've been in all of them. And I got news for you. If you want to see what it's like, if y'all want to go down this road, and if you don't step up to it and stop it from happening, I swear to God, you're going to be just as bad off as we are. And I'm telling you, you don't want to go there.
I appreciate the call, Ike, and thank you for the information. Buddy. Appreciate it. You know, at the end of this, that's what it comes down to. Is people are going to have to wake up and step up, because if we want to be Mississippi, that's where they're going to take us. Our Borowitz report for the day, Andy Borowitz writes, the U.S. policy of exporting democracy abroad has meant that there's very little left at home. He says this is the grim assessment of a new study commissioned by the University of Minnesota, which predicts that if the U.S. continues to export democracy at its current pace, it may completely run out of democracy at home by the year 2015. Professor David Longus, who supervised the study, said, we have been exporting democracy to Afghanistan and Iraq, while there are severe shortages of democracy in Wisconsin and Florida. This is just madness. Citing the study, Speaker of the House John Boehner today said, it is clear to me that sometimes we must explore alternative forms of government, such as oligarchy and plutocracy. Noting that democracy originated in Greece, Mr. Boehner added, we must reduce our dependence on foreign sources of government. The University of Minnesota study contains several proposals, such as outsourcing the U.S. government to the largest democracy in the world, India. The study recommends the work done by Congress could be accomplished much more efficiently by a series of electronic phone prompts. But Mr. Boehner warned that eliminating Congress entirely would have disastrous effects, saying, quote, that would only destroy the entire sector of our economy, especially the prostitution industry. Speaking from one of the states hardest hit by the democracy shortage, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker downplayed the seriousness of the problem, calling democracy overrated. He said, teachers may teach our children that democracy is important, but the solution is to get rid of the teachers, which is what they want to do. Did you see Dennis Kucinich lay into Walker today?
No, I missed that.
Basically got him to admit in a congressional hearing that going after collective bargaining and stealing from teachers and all that had absolutely nothing to do with balancing the budget. I thought it was...
I did catch some of the softballs that the Republicans were throwing.
Oh.
I mean, it was a love fest.
They weren't softballs. Those were beach balls.
And here's the connect. You know what connects all the dots? They all got big money contributions from the Koch brothers. Every one of the ones that threw the big beach balls at the governor of Wisconsin.
Yeah, but the good thing is his approval rating is where? Oh, yeah, in the toilet. As is John Kasich in Ohio, where SB 5 is right now, if they were to go after and look at SB 5, you're looking at double-digit margin between people repealing SB 5. I guess, you know, Kasich has ticked off a number of people, especially the independent voters, who now 54% of them favor repealing SB 5. according to a latest Wenzel Strategies poll. Among Democrats, 73% favor repealing SB 5, while 10% of Democrats say it should be left in place. What's interesting is we've become a fairly polarized nation, if you will, because when they did the kind of overall polling, 32% said they strongly supported it, 38% said they strongly opposed it, and everybody else pretty much had no idea what was going on. Kasich's approval ratings, 37%, had a 56% negative approval rating. Corbett has a 34% approval rating with 44% not too thrilled with him. And I got to be honest, I thought Tom Corbett was kind of laying low, kind of laying under the radar. His approval rating's worse than John Kasich's. Let's take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the EVE payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. 2561.
The following message is brought to you by SEIU Local 668.
My name is Lewis. I help senior citizens get the services they need. I work for you, the taxpayers, in the Area Agency on Aging. Our senior population is growing. Their incomes are shrinking. Their need for government services is increasing, all at the same time. Funding for these services is not keeping pace, which means long waiting lists, huge caseloads, and more seniors at risk. We all know that these are tough economic times, but who wants to see our senior citizens suffer? They did their part. They worked hard and paid their taxes. Now it's our turn to make sure they get the services they need. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they respect our senior citizens and vote to increase funding for programs that protect them.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
To this fight, I'll take my union gun. Gonna end this world with slavery for this war. It's one you're bound to lose. You fascist, you're
one 888 520 Rick, 1-888-520-7425. UPI reported that a Florida man got this package. Evidently, the package delivery company dropped off this package at this guy's house, and inside of it was a $90,000 watch. It wasn't his, but inside of it still was a $90,000 watch. Well, he returned it. And the guy whose watch it was so grateful that he gave him the rest of his tickets to go see the Miami Heat play through the playoffs. So, you know, it goes to show that, you know, some honesty in the world, some honesty, a little bit of honesty, it pays off.
It's worth some money.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, this is just a regular guy in who lives in Florida, you know, just a regular guy. I was thinking, if he was a banker,
I think he would have stolen it. And if you look at the news report that came out today in the Wall Street Journal, who said that U.S. investigators are examining whether some of the world's biggest banks colluded to manipulate a key interest rate before and during the fiscal crisis, affecting trillions of dollars of loans and derivatives. No. Banks cheating? Banks ripping us off? Say it isn't so. Oh, please tell me that Bank of America and Citibank, oh, tell me that they weren't cheating. I love how they put this. The investigators are now looking into whether the banks effectively formed a global cartel. You're looking into it? You're looking into it? Somewhere between, somewhere around $10 trillion in loans they got from the government and, man, $350 trillion in derivatives are tied to this LIBOR, this rating that comes out of London. $350 trillion in derivatives. Think for a second how much money that is. I mean, that is more than the global economy, what, 20 times over? And yet, we keep hearing that Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. No. Wall Street is a Ponzi scheme. All of this stuff that's going on Wall Street is a Ponzi scheme. All of this stuff that these banks did, these thieving, no good, rotten, scumbag bankers who belong in jail.
The scary part is there's very few, if any. Maybe Barney Frank has a pretty good comprehension, but very few people even know, couldn't explain what a hedge fund is. What it does, how it works. That's scary.
The first 4 months of 2008, these investigators point to the fact that 16 banks reported their interest rates, reported their rates, this LIBOR setting. They were within 0.06 percentage points of each other. Now understand, the average dollar LIBOR rate is 3.18% at the time. So for those banks to be that close, there had to be something going on. And I'm hoping that, you know, some criminals go to jail. They're not. We're just going to end up getting screwed again. Today on Capitol Hill, the Senate had a hearing where they pulled in Goldman Sachs and some other bankers. Carl Levin was one of the people leading the thing there. And he's basically saying, look, during the whole crisis, Wall Street screwed the American people. And, you know, at some point, I'm hoping that we get some of the answers to this and some of these people go to jail, but we haven't. We just haven't. And, you know, I love they call Goldman Sachs, they call it Government Sachs, because of how much money they've gotten from us. And you stop and you think about how much money they spend on lobbying, how much money they spend on campaign contributions, $43 million over the last 10 years. And what they get back? $800 billion in government loans. $800 billion. You look at Citigroup. They spent, $77 million on lobbying and campaigns. They made $4 billion profit in 2010, and we gave them almost $2 billion in tax breaks, tax refunds. I mean, stop and think of all the money that we've given these people. And it's never enough. It's never enough. And all that's happened is they've grown bigger and bigger and bigger. And what we've done is we've created a monster that we cannot stop. Even Levin's panel. I mean, this, you're going to go, you're going to beat up Blankenfeld, you're going to beat up to some of the CEOs. They're not going to jail. You know who goes to jail? You know who goes to jail? That idiot who walked into the convenience store and took a Snickers bar. That's who goes to jail. These Wall Street criminals, they never go to jail. Only when they're stupid enough to say, rich people but don't pay taxes, like Leona Helmsley. I point to this report out from Reuters. 40% of ex-cons go back to jail. 40% are back behind bars within 3 years. We spend more than $50 billion on prisons within the last 3 years.
More than on education.
More than on a lot of things. And what's frustrating to me is we're just, you know, the guy who stole the Snickers bar, man, he's the one who gets it.
Well, unfortunately, some of that involves drugs, and I'm not saying that you should change all the drug laws, but some of the people that are in jail now, we should decriminalize some of the offenses. It just doesn't make sense.
Yep. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Mike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Oh, pretty good, Rick. Hey, talking about banks, I thought you'd get a real kick out of this. I just filed my income tax. And whenever I send my income tax in, I send it in with the little green postal card so I get a receipt that it was received.
Right. And
on the part where it says complete this section on delivery is a rubber stamp has been put on there with some rubber stamp signature that's illegible. But what is quite legible is this that reads, Bank of America, agent for the Internal Revenue Service.
Jeez, oh, man. And all I hear the Republicans complaining about is, oh, you're hiring all these IRS agents.
Yes. Doesn't that scare you?
It absolutely scares me. We got a guy who calls all the time and says, you know, we're a fascist nation. We are. I believe it.
We are. Yeah, we are. Absolutely. And, you know, I don't know what the pain threshold is going to have to go a lot higher, Rick. I'm sorry. We aren't there.
Yeah, I've said that a million times.
Yeah, the pain threshold. And I don't know what that threshold looks like and how much Americans will take it before they get angry, but that's all I know.
Yeah, I think it's when people look into their children's eyes and know that their children's stomachs are empty.
I'm not sure that'll do it. I think it's got to go a notch beyond that. I think it's when they start bringing around the push cart again, saying, bring out your debt. I think it'll probably have to get to that level because I'm amazed right now. I'm amazed that not even 3 years ago, we saw the collapse of almost the world economy, and it was brought on during a Republican administration. The first bailouts were George Bush. Nobody knows who Hank Paulson was or that he was on his knees before Nancy Pelosi, which is scary in itself. But whatever, begging, we have to do this because the whole world as we know it will end tomorrow if you don't give me this $1 trillion with no strings attached. And they gave it to him.
Well, they gave it to him because nobody wants it. I got to be honest, I don't know that I would have voted against it, given the scenario that they gave. If everything were to collapse, then you have what you're talking about, that mass suffering where the carts do come down the street.
That's but I look at it this way. I'm not sure we wouldn't have been better. And I'm also not sure I believe those people. If the banking cartels collapse, I mean, we know now that all the home foreclosures have been illegal. And that ball is still rolling and gathering moss every day, getting bigger and bigger. More and more judges are just throwing these banks out of their courtrooms saying, you don't own these properties. This whole process with the computer-owned bank thing has been in every court shot down now.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and so I look at that and say, I'm not sure we would have been worse off. I mean, I think we believed a lie that they told us to take care of themselves. Because the only people I see that made out in that
were the bankers in the Wall Street. I appreciate the call, Mike. Thanks so much. We're right back after this.
Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO says President Obama's promise Wednesday that he wouldn't follow the Republican radical fiscal agenda is an essential commitment for a secure economic future for working Americans. And AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the labor movement is dead set against any cuts to Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid, regardless of who proposes them. The Labor Federation says the nation's economic focus must be on job creation, and the AFL-CIO says Republicans are instead intent on delivering a massive tax cut to the already rich, and they want the middle class and the poor to pay for it. Labor says the truth is we can't have an honest conversation about the deficit without returning fairness to the system, and that means addressing the $100 billion a year in Bush tax cuts for the rich that the nation can't afford. The Paycheck Fairness Act is needed more than ever if women are to erase the still considerable gender wage gap. That's according to the National Partnership for Women and Families, who says that a new study reveals that on average, full-time working women are paid $10,662 less per year than their male counterparts. At the current rate that the gender wage gap has been closing, women won't earn the same as men until 2058. Louisiana is home to the nation's second-largest natural gas discovery. It's located in the north in the Haynesville area near the border with Arkansas. Workers Independent News spoke with the Louisiana Budget Project's Ed Ashworth about this deposit and how it's affecting the state's treasury.
Black gold, oil and gas, is one of the backbones of Louisiana's economy. Like many states, though, Louisiana is facing a budget crunch. Ed Ashworth of the Louisiana Budget Project says that tax breaks given to big oil are a significant piece of this equation.
We have approximately 441 tax exemptions that cost the state about $7 billion a year. One of the large exemptions that we suggested needs more analysis and review is the tax exemption for oil and gas companies for horizontal wells that are drilled.
According to Ashworth, a nonpartisan fiscal watchdog says that Louisiana will lose 80% of the value of the Haynesville wells.
We've also got an incentive program of the exempting for 2 years from severance taxes all the wells that are drilled horizontally, which all the Haynesville wells will be drilled. That is costing us approximately $190 million a year now.
Zoe Sullivan, Workers Independent News, New Orleans.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and by the National Association of Letter Carriers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Now, the mainstream corporate-controlled media has been selling this frame that the wealth class wants pushed, and that is that we're broke. We're broke, and Tina came to town. There's no alternative to spending cuts. All we can do is cut, 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 cut. Every Republican we see on TV spewing from the same corporate line, we're broke, we're broke, we need spending cuts, we need to cut, 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 cut. Sadly, the number of Democrats who bought into the frame, there's a bunch of them as well, so I'm not letting them off either. They're often just as bad. But, folks, I don't think we're broke. I honestly don't. We have billionaires. What we have is a need to have what President Obama called spending reductions in the tax code. I kind of like that. I call it raising taxes, but, whatever you need. Here in this state, we got a governor who called it, asking for contributions. So call it what you want, reductions in the tax code or contributions. I don't care, as long as we're raising a little bit more revenue before we start slashing my children's future. Just amazing to me that we've got a class of billionaires on Wall Street, these hedge fund managers. $1 billion apiece they made in 2009, $850 million apiece in 2010. It's amazing stuff. Les Leopold has written an article over at Alternet. Hedge fund gamblers earn the same in 1 hour as a middle-class household makes in over 47 years. Les, is that true, 47 years?
Well, that's the math I came up with. The top hedge fund guy, a guy named John Paulson, pulled in $4.9 billion in 2010 for himself. And you divide that by the standard, you know, labor hour work year, 2080, you come out to $2.4 million an hour.
He must be really, really efficient.
Oh, he's really efficient. And the average family makes about $50,000 a year. So you divide $50,000, $2.4 million, you get 47 years.
Wow.
So this guy in 1 hour did what the rest of us could do in 47 years. And this is the wonderful part for him. He pays a lower tax rate than we do. His money is not taxed as income. It's taxed as capital gains, even though it's absolutely clear that it's the Apple should be the very top rate income.
Well, that sounds much better than income tax. Capital gains. I like that.
Actually, they have a special loophole. It's called carried interest. They have their own special loophole. So I figured out that the top 25 hedge fund guys pulled in $22 billion. And if they paid their full 35% tax rate, and that's the Bush-reduced tax level, they paid that instead of the 15%, that would pull in twice the amount of money each year as Obama's wage freeze on federal workers.
Yeah, but
just
you know,
for 25 people. So 25 people, fair tax on them, so they pay the same rate as their secretaries, is the same thing as wage freeze on 2 million federal workers.
Yeah, but
25 equals 2 million.
But now, Les, you're talking about class. You're a class war guy now.
I'm talking about fairness that every single person in the country could understand, even most of the conservatives. I've been on talk radio shows with some real right-wingers, and they have trouble explaining how Wall Street gets away with this.
Well, because they're smarter. They're smarter. They work harder. You know, reward. You know, they went out there. They made the risk, so they should reap the reward. At least that's what my right wing friends tell me.
And pay less than you do? Than they do? I don't think so. Lower tax.
The argument that I get back is because, well, you know, investing is risky, so we need them to risk their money. So there has to be some reward there. That's the word I get back. I think it's BS. But that's the word I
get. Bring them on the show. We'll push them a little bit.
I wish they would call. They never do because they cannot make that next step like you're talking about.
Well, it gets even better because that whole sector, the gambling sector of the economy, I did some other work. It will be in the next alternate piece coming up in a few days to try to figure out what maybe all this growth in the financial sector has some connection to jobs. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, the financial sector took in about 15% of all corporate profits. By 2002, they had hit 44%.
Wow.
And this includes insurance, real estate, etc. Well, what percent of all jobs does that 44% of profits equal? 5.9%. That whole sector can only produce 5.9% of all the jobs that we have. So, now, when the crash happened, their profit as percent of all corporate profits went back to 1960 rates. And I thought, oh, fantastic. You know what? Back up to 30%.
Yeah, they're fat and happy.
Oh, they're fat and happy, and they're growing while the unemployment rate is still, you know, just about 9%. And their growth will not translate into jobs for everybody else. And we have to do something about it. And there actually is a movement afoot overseas to put a very small tax on each and every gambling transaction that takes place in the stocks, bonds, derivatives, et cetera.
I'm right there.
Pardon?
I'm right there. A small transfer tax, I'm right there with it.
Yeah. They call it the Robin Hood tax. And it passed in a non-binding resolution through the European Parliament. And the G20, you know, the group of 20 developed nations, are considering it, but you know who's opposing it?
I can only guess it's us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we've got a system set up where the bankers and the Wall Street criminals, they control this country.
very interesting. I don't know if you saw today's Times. On the report of the Senate Investigative Committee on the crash, they're calling for a pretty dramatic increase in the criminal investigations. And, you know, I'm no lawyer. I can't tell you which laws they violated. But if you keep your eye open, these hedge funds, one after the other, are starting to get nailed for insider trading. So, they take the risk and they reap the rewards. But you know what? They don't want to take the risk. They would just as soon have insider trading information, make their bets that way.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
They prefer not to take the risk.
Right. I don't think they're taking the risk at all because we're the ones backing their bets. You look at this crash, it all had to do with them betting and betting and betting, and us, the taxpayer, the citizens of this country, we're the ones who held the bag. Not them.
Well, think about it. I do these little thumbnail calculations to kind of make this all make sense. So the image is, you go into Vegas, like if I said I'm going to back you when you go into Vegas, and you get to keep your winnings. If you lose, I'll take care of it. All right? So that's what they did. And they gambled and gambled and gambled to the point where the losses were so big that it crashed the economy, froze the economy and crashed it. Here's how many jobs were lost in 2008. Imagine the entire workforce of all of New England disappearing. That's Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire. Imagine every single worker not having a job. That's what happened as a result of their reckless gambling. And every single investigation of the crash points directly to Wall Street. They killed the equivalent of the entire New England working population.
You mean it wasn't those greedy teachers and those public sector workers and PBS and you know, Planned Parenthood? Didn't they bring down the economy?
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of what bothers me about what's going on at the state level is that there would be no Wisconsin clash, no Ohio clash, no deficit mania that's going on in Washington. Had Wall Street not crashed the system, had we put a windfall profits tax on them, had we closed the loophole on carried interest, had we put a financial transaction tax in place as they were on their knees begging for support, and Ben Bernanke, chairman of the Fed, admits that 12 of the 13 major banking institutions would have gone under had we not bailed them out. Had we put the controls on then and then did a little revenue sharing with the states because of those 8 million jobs that were lost virtually overnight, the state and local budgets, you know, just collapsed because the revenue collapsed. Had we done that revenue sharing, there would be no fiscal crisis at the state level, and we wouldn't be having this argument. People, wouldn't be able to kind of shift the discussion to blaming unions, public sector workers, and somehow this big debt that we ran up. We didn't run it up. Wall Street ran it up, and they should pay for it.
I agree. Oh, one of the first places I think we should have started after the collapse was going back and putting Glass-Steagall back into place. Seemed to work up until that point pretty well. Not letting banks become gambling casinos. I think that's not a bad idea.
Catch this. Their defense, J.P. Morgan Chase just got caught, you know, doing something slimy. And their defense, what they said was, no, the reason one part of the firm screwed the clients of another part of the firm is we have these Chinese walls up, and we're not supposed to talk through them, and we're not supposed to communicate. I'm thinking, now, wait a second. You got a business that's so big that one hand doesn't know what the other is doing so that one hand can, use insider information to screw the clients of the other. And you're going to claim that somehow there's efficiencies of having all this in the same organization. Not only should we have Glass-Steagall, but these banks should be broken up into many different components. I just checked yesterday. The top six banks, I believe it is, now control $11 trillion of the $13 trillion worth of banking assets in the whole country.
Wow.
And the rest of it is shared amongst the other 7,600 banks. So it's a highly concentrated industry. It's become virtually an oligopoly, so they can, you know, corner markets, raise prices, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to be making money hand over fist. Corporate profits, the nation's wealth is going to tilt once again into their casinos. And I'm telling you, we fixed nothing.
No, we didn't.
We fixed nothing.
No,
And what's going to pay for the debt we ran up is basically the middle class benefit. That's what they're going to go after.
Yeah, they're going to destroy Medicare. They're going to raise Social Security. They're going to do all of these things that take away all the progress of basically to repeal the 20th century, like the Republican Party wants.
Yeah, well, you know, I hope they enjoy the 19th century. If they repeal it enough, maybe we'll get some of the labor action we had in the 19th century. That wasn't bad.
That's what I've been saying. You know, go ahead, take away collective bargaining rights, take away the National Labor Relations Act. Then we go back to, people taking over to the streets.
I hate to say it, it's the first time I've seen labor this feisty in a long time. You threaten their basic rights, they come out fighting.
Well, and it's about time.
Yeah, absolutely.
The piece is hedge fund gamblers earn the same in 1 hour as a middle class household makes in over 47 years by Les Leopold. It's over at Alternet. You can get there from our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Les Leopold's name. Last question I've got for you. You know, I look at this and, you know, I'm trying to shake people awake. And it's the reason we wanted you to come on and talk to us tonight. Where do we begin this education process? I mean, if you haven't gotten it by now, personally, I'm like, I think you're just brain dead and you're never going to get it, but there's part of me that can't let that go.
Well, look, you're asking the hardest question of all. I think we've got to pound away on Wall Street mercilessly, and, you know, they're going to fight back every which way, but we can't let them off the hook. We can't get sucked into the, you know, deficit debate as if that's the only debate worth having. We've got to say not just the wealthy in general should pay their share, but the people who wreck the economy should be paying for the damage they did.
Yep.
Every American understands that. We could take that door to door. I kind of wish there was a coalition that could form that was big enough that would take that fight seriously and focus on it. It's coming, you know. You never know. We might wake up one day, Wisconsin went national, and bingo, then you can be right at the head of that parade. I know you'll be there.
Yep. Well, you know, as all these states keep talking about cutting education and cutting social programs, I think maybe people are going to wake up. Anyway, Les Leopold, I appreciate the talk, and I appreciate the work you guys do over there at Alternet and the pieces that you write.
Yeah, they're really good people. I'm telling you, it's been a pleasure working with them. I'm going to stick with them for a while, I think.
Good stuff you guys put out. Thanks so much, Les.
All right. Take care now. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith. The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
If you want to know how the economy is doing, don't bother checking the Dow Jones average or tracking the unemployment numbers. Instead, consult the spiritualists. Not the tarot card readers or those who have extrasensory perception and commune with the supernatural, but the people of crass commerce who deal in liquid spirits, i.e. booze. Despite our nation's relentless and depressing jobless recovery, or perhaps because of it, spirits are on the rise. Overall sales of liquor were flat during the Great Recession, but popped up by 2.3% last year to a total of more than $19 billion. Within that general number, however, lies a more telling economic indicator. Consumer spending on the cheaper stuff is down by nearly 2%, while the super premium goods had an 11% hike in sales in 2010. This sales data is consistent with the ongoing decline in working people's incomes. They're in a downward spiral that leaves them shopping for even cheaper buzzes than two-buck chuck, even as the affluent few are trading up to single malt scotches and boutique bourbons. Then there are the imbibers at the tippy top of America's economy, the Wall Street bonus babies and your billionaire class. They enjoy a constant liquidity, showing few ups and downs on the booze index because they're always rich.
These swells buy spirits from the locked cabinets of exclusive liquor dealers, taking home a case of, say, the 2005 Domaine de la Romanée-Conti. It's $4,000 a bottle. Perhaps the redundant use of the name Romanée-Conti doubles its price, but if you have to ask what it costs, you're in the wrong zip code. This is Jim Hightower saying, yeah, times are hard for most folks with no relief in sight, but I'm sure that you take great comfort in knowing that those at the top are always in high spirits, don't you? Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out. HightowerLowdown.com.
The Blue Blood Sea Red. The Rick Smith Show. Welcome to the New York Gage.
Well, you know, you talk about going back to the Dark Ages. And, you know, during the interview with Les, you know, I said the Republicans want to go back and repeal the 20th century, which I truly believe. They want to take us back to the good old days of the 1880s, 1890s, where the railroad magnates can pay half the working class to murder the other half, where you had working groups against each other and the bosses were able to pit worker against worker because people were starving. Their children were hungry. They were going to do whatever they had to do to make sure that they provided for their families. You know, I look at what's going on in India right now. And according to the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights, they're putting pressure on General Motors to settle a strike that's been going on in India for since March 16th. In this factory in India, the workers make somewhere between 47 and 92 cents an hour. They suffer from spinal cord injuries due to inhumane and unsafe working conditions. They toil long hours. And now they want to organize. They're saying that the company has violated a number of international treaties, a number of international acts, and they're asking General Motors to say, hey, you know what? Step in and do what you said you were going to do. Because if you remember, General Motors said what they were going to do is they were America. You know, what's good for America, what's good for General Motors is good for America. And what they were going to do is they were going to go global. They were going to take that what's good for General Motors is good for everybody mentality global. And they were going to go into all of these different countries, and they were going to have the best human rights. They were going to have the best worker rights. They're going to be the gold standard for manufacturing globally. You look at what's going on here in this factory in India, who makes the Chevy Cruze, the Evo, the Tavera, the Optra. It's not happening. 47 cents an hour. People with spinal injuries because of the unsafe and inhumane conditions. And what you've got, and it just blows my mind that the Republican hit squad has a chapter in India. The American Chamber of Commerce in India is operating there. And their spokesperson, their executive director, Ajay Singhai, says the unrest is of great concern. We would like to know what the extent this government is going to do and how to tackle the labor unions and the protesters. Not how do we make the conditions better, not how do we find a peaceful resolution to where everyone wins. No. How to make the government tackle that problem, put them back to work. And the company is saying, you know what, we're not going to do it. In fact, we're going to fire those people. They don't come back to work, we're going to fire them. And I keep saying, you know, at some point, we're going to have to hold these companies accountable. When GM took money from the federal government to save them from collapse, the one thing I didn't want to see is them build plants all over the world and ship those cars back here. The one thing I didn't want to see is them take that money and do exactly this. You know, just recently we celebrated the 100th anniversary, and I shouldn't even say celebrated. We commemorated, memorialized would probably be better, the 100th anniversary of the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire that basically changed the American workplace forever. And the sad thing is we're seeing the exact same working conditions and even worse around the world by the companies that we've respected, by the products that we purchase. Are we making those countries better? The sad reality is we're not making them better. We're making ourselves worse. And at the end of this, I got to be honest, this is a fight that we have to involve ourselves. This is something that the UAW has to involve themselves into. This is something that American labor, American citizens, American consumers have to step in the middle of and say, you know what? You need to treat all workers with dignity and respect and treat their rights with respect. But we don't seem to think that way in this country. We seem to think of, oh, I can get this cheap trinket for a penny less than the guy down the street who's got a union job makes it. Or, oh, I can get this coffee mug. Oh, it's a penny less than that American-made one made by some 8-year-old kid in Bangladesh under God knows what conditions. And again, I come back to politics with this. This is where our government has to put their foot down. This is where our government has to have trade policies that outlaws stuff like this. Just not happening. And it's frustrating, Jake. Just frustrating on so many levels. You look at this, we're not making the world better.
Well, there's one other avenue. And it takes organizing, and that's through organized efforts through stockholders. It's happened in some other companies. I don't know if it can be effective here, but that's another avenue. That's appalling. Again, it reminds you of what happened in this country 100 years ago. Literally.
You know, again, you know, at the end of this, we cannot make ourselves better if what we're doing is exploiting others. And I can't emphasize that enough. You may think, oh, that's just those Indians or that's just those Mexicans. That's us. Because other first world countries, other developed countries look at us the same way. You look at the IKEA situation. You know, the workers in Sweden are appalled at the conditions that American workers toil under, appalled at the wage structure, appalled at the fact that they don't get health care, appalled at the fact that they don't get pensions. Yet we're quite happy to take those jobs. Or so it seems. And I'm hoping that those folks down there in Danville, Virginia, who work at that IKEA plant, I'm hoping that their organizing drive is successful. And I'm hoping that all the workers start to wake up and go, hey, I'm tired of getting the shaft.
That's the difference in Finland. The labor movement there is stronger. That country and their society values workers' rights.
Absolutely. Anyway, let's take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, Rick at therickssmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally and look forward to the conversation. You know, we've been talking about this frame that's been pushed. And it's all about spending cuts. It's all about pain. It's all about, you know, this concept of shared sacrifice. And, you know, I'm not against those things if I thought it was necessary. I think we should be looking at the revenue side first and then talk about deep, painful, drastic, draconian cuts, like the billions of dollars that are being stripped from education and the 56% of the higher education budget that our governor, Tom Corporate, is talking about slashing. I'm in favor of investing. That to me, is just the way to go. Not this slash and burn. But what's interesting to me is there are a number of wealthy folks out there like Warren Buffett who are saying, you know what? I should be paying more. I shouldn't be paying less as a percentage of my income than my secretary. And I tend to agree. But I find it interesting that there are a number of very wealthy people who think this way. And I've got, Judy Piguet on the line. She, you know, very wealthy person, inherited a bunch of money, from her parents, wanting to be taxed more. Judy, thanks for taking time for us.
It's my pleasure.
I'm sorry. It's almost in this country at this time. It's almost something that just takes my breath away that someone would say, "Hey, tax me more." Why?
Well, I suppose because I'm a daughter, a sister, a mother, and a grandmother. Because I see a picture that's bigger than just me and this moment. Because I think that everyone deserves a safe place to sleep, a reason to wake up, and a healthy earth on which to wake up. And if we're going to do that, we need to make some change in our national priorities and policies. So one of those is a change in taxation. And I think that if we were to adopt some of those changes, we wouldn't have the deficit, and we would have no need to do the draconian cuts that you mentioned at the beginning of your show.
Right. You know, you wrote a piece over at faireconomy.org, the title of it, "I'm a Genetic Lottery Winner, Tax Me." And what I found interesting is you made a very interesting point. Your family line built Peterbilt trucks and Kenworth trucks, and obviously, without public investment, you know, during the socialist years of Dwight Eisenhower, we wouldn't have a highway system for those trucks.
You're so right. I can remember when I started paying taxes that it was 70% almost on all unearned income. So that would be capital gains and dividends. And now it's 15%. That's a lot of money that the government is not collecting and that I did not work. Most of my money does come from unearned income. And I have a business called Personal Safety Nets that talks about how to look for security by working together rather than isolating in fear and, you know, bunkering down.
Right. You know,
but it's pretty counterculture, maybe, but I think it's part of a growing trend to see that we're all part of this country and it takes all of us to put it together.
That's an amazing point of view you have there. But, you know, most of my very conservative friends would say, you know, Judy, you spend your money a lot better than the federal government could ever possibly spend it. Why would you ever want to give up any portion of what is yours to help those kids to eat and those sick people to get better and those homeless people to have housing?
Well, partly because regardless of how well I think the federal government or a local government spends its money, I can only spend mine in the little pocket where I am, and I think this nation sits on the backs and on the work of people who live other than in my neighborhood. So it's not just about me, mine, my neighborhood. It's broader, and that is one of the roles of government. Yeah. So that would be one good reason. Another is not everyone. I don't spend as much money as the federal government would or any government if I have it. I'm likely to reinvest it, not spend it. And it is, was it Warren Buffett who said, you said that he shouldn't be paying less taxes than his secretary?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we just talked to an author here a minute ago. He was talking about the hedge fund managers who, you know, made $4.9 billion last year, paid 15% tax, which is much higher than his secretary would have paid. Now, that's a lot of money, yes, but still it's 15% of his income. And the reality is, you know, as this guy pointed out, with a little trick number, with just some calculation, that in 1 hour, that guy made more than a middle-class family made in 47 years.
If you want to get a way of looking at this, you can go to responsiblewealth.org/tax pledge. People who are of high wealth can pledge to give a portion of what they don't pay currently in taxes because of tax cuts, and they can promise to give that to nonprofits of their choice. But anybody can use this to figure out what kind of savings someone with a high income gets from unearned sources. So if you took three hypothetical scenarios, one is a family with two adults, both of whom are working, and they together, $250,000 basically from one who owns a business and another $250,000 from one who's a lawyer maybe. So they've got a combined income of $500,000. Because it's all earned income, they will pay a tax of about $145,000. Okay, that's one.
Right.
Then the family with two adults, together they earn about $100,000, and they have $400,000 in unearned. That's capital gains and dividends. So they still have an income of about $500,000, right?
Right.
Their tax is only about $77,000. So they only pay half what the two full-time working people with a higher working income come get. The third scenario is a single individual who has the same $500,000 income, but it's all from unearned. That individual is going to save about $100,000 in her taxes. Now, how does that make sense?
Well, it rewards those who are willing to take risks, and it rewards those people who are smart.
They're no smarter. It may be that they're luckier. It may be that they have some good advisors, but they still got, they may not be one bit smarter.
They work harder?
Doing what? Managing their money?
Drinking margaritas on the deck of their boat? I don't know.
Well, you know, and they may be doing great stuff, but I'm going to just put out there that maybe the couple that's trying to figure out how to get by with two kids in school and, you know, trying to keep the trucks on the road, and that they also are working very hard with their money.
Yeah, I wish I lived in your neighborhood where just an average salary was $500,000. Wow.
Well, I wish I lived in that neighborhood too, but that's not really. I was just trying to come up with an easy one.
No, I got you. I'm just pulling your leg a little.
You're
bit.
You're being silly. I know.
But you know, the reality is, and you know, I said earlier on that, you know, right now the Republicans who became, you know, they got the power this last November on the promise that they were going to create jobs. Their only plans seem to be, like with energy, it's drill, baby, drill. With infrastructure, it's crumble, baby, crumble, because we're not investing in our infrastructure. I'm afraid of is all of the things that my grandparents' generation left me is going to be what my children are going to have to repair.
Well, I believe my history is correct if I say that if you go back to the beginning of the century, we decided there should be a reasonable and a stiff inheritance tax so that we got away from the sort of dynamic wealth.
Right. What Krugman calls the Great Compression.
Right. And it was a very effective at increasing our spending on infrastructure. And we've moved in another direction since then. And we see crumbling roads and we see defunded schools. And you combine that with a lot of spending on wars and very little on foreign aid of any sort. But, we have hunkered down as a country. And I think we would do far better to change our priorities and change some of these policies.
Are you discouraged by the dialogue in Washington, though? Because I'm what you're saying, no politician, well, Jan Schakowsky and a handful of other Democrats are saying, you know, maybe raise this up a little bit. But the vast majority of politicians in Washington, they've bought into this spending cut frame.
Well, I think they're wrong. I think that President Obama opened up a great conversation talking about with a deficit reduction proposal. I don't think it goes far enough. We may have to make some cuts in spending, but I'd rather see them in other than the accepted ways.
Right.
And I don't have a particular, I'm not a politician. I don't have a plan that would say this is exactly how we should do it. But I do know that if we increase the income that comes in from the people who have the most income, we would be in a far less difficult position, and we should get started instead of waiting longer.
So let me ask you this, because my grandfather always, and you know, my grandfather, you know, didn't go beyond the eighth grade, but you know, he was a street smart guy, and I've kind of followed this, you know, this logic that he gave me that if a rich person, you know, such as yourself, were to spend a dollar to tell me I don't need something, then you know, chances are I'd better spend two to get it, because rich folks generally don't pull money out of their pocket unless there's a benefit. So I guess using that logic, how would raising your taxes actually help you? Or wouldn't it?
Well, I think that it would help me in that there would be less social need that I would then want to address through charitable giving. It would help me in that my children would inherit a world with less of a divide between have and have-nots, with a greater middle class. That my children and grandchildren would inherit a world where the infrastructure was supported, maintained, and expanded, rather than crumbling. Those would be three ways.
Yeah, and that sounds like I want to live in that world. Because to be honest, I don't care how much money you had. If you were on that I-35 bridge that collapsed into the Mississippi, money wasn't going to help you there.
And that was right by where my daughter lived.
Oh, really?
So it sort of comes home.
So, you know, I give you all the credit in the world, and I thank you for coming on and telling us your story. And I think, you know, you guys, you're doing a great job and a great service to the country. You know, keep it up.
Well, thank you very much. And please encourage people to go to responsiblewealth.org and take a look at what they have there. Think about the world that you want for your children, not because you give it to them or not because you think that if you somehow win the lottery, you'll be the one who can give it to them, but because you've worked together to create a system that provides it for more people.
That's a beautiful thought. Judy Pigott, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rick.
All right. Have a great night. Again, the website, responsiblewealth.org. We'll get a link over at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Judy's name. It'll take you right there. We're going to take a quick break back with your calls. What do you think? Do we raise taxes on the wealthy like Jan Schakowsky wants? I think so. We're back after this.
Money
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Amy Morton, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made, and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The Working Class Radio Experience. Where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and Bob Red. Bought a shirt that can be on. Blue denim head is vape. Oh, he's a working class man.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Reuters is reporting in Detroit right now. They have appointed a czar to oversee the city of Detroit. They're calling him an emergency manager. Evidently, their public school system is in financial distress, so they've put this czar in charge of getting them on firmer footing, they say. So today they sent layoff notices to all of the school districts, nearly 5,500 unionized employees. So basically they've laid off all the teachers. They've laid off everybody. And, you know, you go to this and you say, really, you're just going to do away with education? Is that the idea? But here's the weird thing. You know, you go back to the legislation that they passed. This Public Act 4 that they call, that they can appoint this czar, and he can set aside all contracts. He has the power to do whatever he wants. Contracts be damned. So all of these teachers have, I guess in essence, been fired. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, how many people they call back, what then becomes of this. And again, it comes back to this frame that we keep hearing. That, oh, we're broke. We have these massive spending problems. We can't afford those greedy teachers. And those public sector worker people can't afford them either. You know, because we got that massive spending problem. You know, those kids that want to eat. And they want education. And they get sick. Why should I have to pay for somebody who's hungry or homeless? Why should I have to pay because they get sick? Let them starve. We're broke. Remember? We spend too much. We're broke. Yet you look at the reality. The reality is in 2010, we collected less in taxes than we have in the last 60 years. We have collected the least amount of taxes as a portion of GDP that we have in the last 60 years. You look at the Bush handouts at $1.7 trillion that was added to our debt because of the Bush handouts. That could have paid for 24 million kids to go to college. 24 million. But we chose to hand it to a few people. And you look at the reality that corporate income taxes right now are amounting to about 1% of GDP. That's 60% lower than it was just 40 years ago. And you look at the big companies that we seem to love to throw cash at, and we seem to love to throw accolades upon. In fact, we take its CEO and we make him the czar of the job creation. General Electric, $5 billion in U.S. profits. They paid zero zilch in taxes. In fact, we gave them money back. You look at ExxonMobil, the most profitable corporation in the history of the world, even more profitable than the East India Trading Company. They paid zero income tax in 2009. Zip, zilch, nothing. So when you go to file your taxes on Monday and you look at that bottom line, you go, holy crud. I paid a lot in taxes. I'm with you. You are taxed enough already. I agree with you. People like Judy, they're not. And she's saying, tax me for the common good, for the good of the country. Tax me. You know what the Bush legacy is going to be? The Bush legacy is going to be just like the Reagan legacy. Hand out tons of money to the very wealthy and screw the working class. You look at that tax reform bill of 86. What did it do? Lowered the top marginal rate, jacked up the bottom rate. Rich people paying less, poor people paying more. You and me, the schlubs in the middle class, the people who punch a clock, the paycheck crowd, we get taxed at about 25% while the wealthy yacht-sitting, margarita-drinking, never-done-an-honest-day labor in their life crowd, well, who basically live off of our sweat and our blood and our back-breaking labor, they only pay 15% tax. And even that, they don't pay because there are numerous loopholes. They've got tons of shelter so they can evade paying even that little bit of amount. And we hear people say, oh, we need to lower that even more. How much lower? Should we lower it to the General Electric rate of zero plus handouts? Should we do that? I don't think so. I honestly don't think so, Jake. And it's frustrating when you look at this stuff and you look at the spending cuts that they throw out there, the destruction of Medicare, when there's all this wealth out there.
And it all comes down to, in their eyes, they have this golden opportunity to get what they've always wanted to do, destroy social programs, which they considered an anathema to their political philosophy. And the Republicans have always been good at taking an emergency and using that emergency to say, see, this is the panacea. And the panacea is always what they've always wanted. Lower taxes, less government, give more to the top.
But how low are we talking? How low do we have to go? What tax rate would the wealthy like? What would be enough?
Here's where I agree with my friend Michael, your friend Michael. Sometimes I think he overestimates the situation, but I think he's right. For this country to change, I think there has to be more pain. At the end of the day, it has to be a revolt at the ballot box. I hope it happens in 2012. I'm not so sure it will, Rick. Ultimately, the American people have to take responsibility for their future. I don't know what, I don't know how else you do it unless we want to get really radical and say, well, you know, maybe we need physically another revolution. I don't think we want to go there.
I say you take to the Capitol, you sit your behind down in the Capitol rotunda and you stay there until something gets
done.
And
it might come to that.
Like they did in Wisconsin.
And it might come to that.
That's what has to happen.
That's the beginning, though, Rick.
And you know what frustrates me?
That's not the ending.
All I keep hearing from my Republican friends is, well, you know, if we raise taxes, it's going to hurt small business. It's going to hurt small business. And, look, I'm a big fan of small business. I don't want to harm small businesses. You know, I'm a small business owner here. The reality is, you know, back in the lame duck session when the Republicans were working their, doing their damnedest to be able to pay off their campaign donors and their special interests, and Democrats were trying to get a little bit of an extension for unemployment compensation for the people who were harmed during the Bush recession. All they kept saying is, oh, if we tax people over $250,000, you're gonna kill small businesses. Oh, you're just gonna destroy them. When the reality is only 3 out of every 100 small businesses make that kind of income. I'm talking about 3%. 3%. But you know, hey, don't let the facts get in your way. You know, when they say, well, most small businesses make over $250,000. They have revenue over $250,000, yes. But most small business owners I know, they don't pocket $250,000. They pocket like you and me, $50,000, $60,000, somewhere in that range. they're not the ones we're talking about. When I talk about wealthy people, when I talk about rich people, I'm talking about Judy, who was handed down a manufacturing empire. Never going to have to work a day in her life. Never. She chooses to. She chooses to start businesses, and she chooses to do other things because that fulfills her life, but she didn't have to.
But she's what she's exhibiting, Rick, in the long term is enlightened self-interest.
Yep.
Yeah, she's doing it because she feels she's doing it for her country. But beyond that, the truth is, if the country goes downhill, she goes with it, with her wealth.
Yeah, and the reality is, like I said, if she were sitting on that bridge in I-35 all when it crumbled and went into the Mississippi, all the money in the world wasn't going to help her. And that's the kind of thing that we need to focus on, the common good. And there are so many opportunities out there. They're talking about somewhere between 0.25% and 0.5% transfer tax on just the short-term speculation. Me, I believe in investing. If you're investing in a company, you buy that stock, you hold on to it, you're investing in it. If you buy a stock today, you sell it tomorrow, you didn't invest in it. You gambled. And I think we should discourage that. And that's what the tax code can be used for, to encourage certain behavior, investing in corporations over the long haul, you know, get a little good return and not have to pay so much tax on it, or discourage other things, like putting a tax on something to discourage people doing these multiple trades in one day. They're saying if we could just put 0.5%, 0.5% on short-term speculation, not things that people hold for 6 months, short-term, a day, a week, it could raise $170 billion annually. $170 billion. Year after year after year.
And I believe there have been some efforts in Congress to do that.
Yeah, but it didn't get very far. And the reality is we don't have this grand spending problem that the Republicans want to ram down your throat. If you stop and you really think about it, now look, you know, we're talking about collecting taxes at the lowest rate in 60 years. As a portion of our GDP, the lowest rate in 60 years. There are only four countries of the developed world, only four countries in the OECD that collect less taxes than we do as a percentage of their GDP. Chile, Korea, Mexico, and Turkey. I ask you, is that the company we want to keep? Do you really want the Mexican infrastructure? I don't know, you ever been to Mexico, Jake?
No, I haven't.
Their roads are dirt roads. Their roads are gravel. Their roads are very bad. I was, you know, when I was 30, I was still dumb. We went down to Cozumel. We went, we stayed in a place called Playa del Carmen.
And we drove down?
No. We flew down there, but I did a car. Duh. I rented a Jeep and we went and drove 100 miles, down to Xi'an and down to the couple of the other places where they, you know, other tourist traps, but still along the main route, lots of chance to get mugged, lots of chances to get hijacked, and lots of chances to get ripped off. And the roads were horrible. The infrastructure was horrible. Is that what we want? Do we want that kind of an infrastructure? Because we're getting there, man. You look at the roads coming into this town here in Harrisburg, they are horrible. You go through a lot of the areas, chunks of concrete crumbling off the bridges, your steel rebar being exposed. Most of the bridges have outlived their life expectancy. What'd they say, 50% of all the bridges in this state are functionally deficient? What does that say about us? What does it say about how are we going to attract business with that kind of an infrastructure? And I don't know about you, but I left here at rush hour. It took me almost forever to get out of here. I would love to have a high-speed rail. I'd love to have public transportation. But we fail. We fail as a nation to have any vision beyond the tip of our nose. You know, it's that carpe diem, live for today, right now. I want it all now, and the hell with tomorrow. I don't care. It's amazing stuff.
Well, and they've sold a lot of Americans who tended not to have the life experience of the 50s and 60s when the American economy was the envy of the world. And why? Because, well, not, yeah, there's a lot of factors, but one of the big factors was we invested massive amounts of money in our infrastructure.
That we did.
And they have persuaded a lot of people to swallow the big lie.
Yep.
That government cannot do anything.
So what do we do? Tell us. We're back after this. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The AFL-CIO says President Obama's promise Wednesday that he wouldn't follow the Republican radical fiscal agenda is an essential commitment for a secure economic future for working Americans. And AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the labor movement is dead set against any cuts to Medicare, Social Security, and Medicaid, regardless of who proposes them. The Labor Federation says the nation's economic focus must be on job creation, and the AFL-CIO says Republicans are instead intent on delivering a massive tax cut to the already rich, and they want the middle class and the poor to pay for it. Labor says the truth is we can't have an honest conversation about the deficit without returning fairness to the system, and that means addressing the $100 billion a year in Bush tax cuts for the rich that the nation can't afford. The Paycheck Fairness Act is needed more than ever if women are to erase the still considerable gender wage gap. That's according to the National Partnership for Women and Families, who says that a new study reveals that on average, full-time working women are paid $10,662 less per year than their male counterparts. At the current rate that the gender wage gap has been closing, women won't earn the same as men until 2058. Louisiana is home to the nation's second-largest natural gas discovery. It's located in the north in the Haynesville area near the border with Arkansas. Workers Independent News spoke with the Louisiana Budget Project's Ed Ashworth about this deposit and how it's affecting the state's treasury.
Black gold, oil and gas, is one of the backbones of Louisiana's economy. Like many states, though, Louisiana is facing a budget crunch. Ed Ashworth of the Louisiana Budget Project says that tax breaks given to big oil are a significant piece of this equation.
We have approximately 441 tax exemptions that cost the state about $7 billion a year. One of the large exemptions that we suggested needs more analysis and review is the tax exemption for oil and gas companies for horizontal wells that are drilled.
According to Ashworth, a nonpartisan fiscal watchdog says that Louisiana will lose 80% of the value of the Haynesville wells.
We've also got an incentive program of the exempting for 2 years from severance taxes all the wells that are drilled horizontally, which all the Haynesville wells will be drilled. That is costing us approximately $190 million a year now.
Zoe Sullivan, Workers Independent News, New Orleans.
This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and by the National Association of Letter Carriers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange. Let's change
keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me. We're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say, revolution starts now. I think it's time for change.
Hear ye, hear ye. All honorable Governor Tom Corporate doth speak the word. Evidently, he has come out and, well, he has made April 11th the day of, or April 12th, the Teach Children to Save Day, the proclamation, whereas, as Pennsylvania's business community recovers from recession and grows, financial education is important to helping Pennsylvania consumers achieve financial security. Meet personal financial goals and contribute to the Commonwealth's economic growth and prosperity. And the governor says, whereas the Pennsylvania Office of Financial Education will offer programs again this year to help teachers, community-based organizations, and employee benefits professionals provide high-quality, age-appropriate financial education. And whereas many Pennsylvania financial institutions will participate in Children Teach Them to Save Day on April 12th. And the National Credit Union Youth Week, which will be celebrated April 17th through the 23rd, during which financial professionals will visit schools and teach young people basic principles of saving and spending. Whereas the Department of Banking, assisting thousands of Pennsylvanians each year throughout the Office of Consumer Services to make informed decisions on financial matters. And whereas the Pennsylvania Jumpstart Coalition for Personal Financial Literacy is working to improve financial education in kindergarten through 12th grade, therefore the proclamation doth be made in special recognition of the importance of affordable, accessible, high-quality financial education. I, Tom Corporate, Governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, do hereby proclaim April 2011 Financial Education Month right here in Pennsylvania, and encourage all citizens, parents, teachers, community leaders, and others to seek to improve their own personal financial habits. Given under my hand and the seal of the governor at the city of Harrisburg, this first day of April, in the year of our Lord 2011, of the Commonwealth of the 235th, Tom Corbett, Governor. So did you know? Hey, did you know April is Financial Education Month? And we get to learn in Financial Education Month how to cut $1 billion from education, how to screw college kids out of 56% of the revenue that used to go to them, how to start a voucher program that's going to be an entitlement for very wealthy people to take another $1 billion out. Financial Education Month! I just wish someone would sit down with our governor, Tom Corporate, and explain to him exactly what the hell he's talking about. Or am I just missing the point?
No, I think there's one thing in your proclamation you forgot to say, hear ye, hear ye.
I did at the very beginning.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
Were you sticking pizza in your face again?
No, I've already done that. But I like the approach. It's like a proclamation among some of the former kings.
Well, we are the serfs, and our leader hath spoken from the palace there. In fact, the palace that we pay for. You know, somebody told me on our Facebook page. Someone said, well, you know, the governor only makes X amount of dollars, and these union leaders, they make, you know, twice that.
Oh.
I go, yeah, but the governor gets a mansion to live in. He gets a driver and a fleet of cars and an airplane and a maid service and meals and you name it, he gets it. I wonder if he's got someone who will wipe his derriere for him.
What union officials are they talking about? I know about in your local.
Well, they're talking.
And in my local.
Well,
trust me, there's a lot of rank and file that make more than the top leaders of our local.
No, I mean, some of the bigwigs in Washington make a nice 400,000 somewhere in that
range. And that is just a very small number.
Well, it's a small number of people, but, you know, you can make the argument that it's still a lot of money for a union leader to be making, on dues money. And mm-hmm. I would, you know, I'd be right there with you if that were I think $400,000 or $500,000 a year is an awful lot of money. You know, if we're going to be benching the CEO class, we shouldn't follow their.
but to be fair, each international is different. Some of them pay a lot less. Mine does.
But at the end of the day, you know, in talking about this education month, and it just caught me as kind of funny, that April, I just now heard of it. April is Financial Education Month, and you know maybe talking to our governor about the failure to invest in the future, i.e. our children, the failure to invest in preventative health care for all those people that he booted off of adult basic. Maybe we should be talking about that. Because, you know, when I was a kid, first started driving, my grandfather said, you know, Rick, you change the oil every 3,000 miles. You do some preventative maintenance. You check the battery. You check, kick the tires every once in a while. These cars are going to last you a while. You invest in a little preventative maintenance. Going to treat you well. If you don't change the oil but every 20,000 miles, the tires are bald, the battery needs to be kick-started every other day, you don't have any brake fluid, you don't have any power steering fluid, you don't have anything in there, not going to get you very far. And that's what our governor is doing. He's taking the Bush mentality of, let's take the Ferrari down the road with no oil in the engine and no power steering fluid and see how far and how fast we can take it before it finally breaks down. Because that's what you're doing when you're not investing in education. That's what you're doing when you're booting people off of preventative, just the small amount of health care they were getting. Because, look, at the end of this, if you don't go to the doctor, and this is what drove me nuts about the health care debate. You had a bunch of people saying, well, if they got free health care, they'll go to the doctor. Yeah, I want people going to the doctor because you prevent things early. And when you prevent things early, you can take care of them early. There's this guy. He's got an institute down in Philadelphia. Post office guy, you know, with kite and flag and all that. The key and the kite. He had a name.
Ben Franklin.
Yeah, him, that guy, with the glasses and the stove. Him, the ounce of prevention, pound of cure, sound familiar? Why kick these people off of health insurance? Why? Why not get people going to the doctor? Why not set up places for people to get routine exams? Never made sense to me. It seems like we want to have this bizarre system that only takes care of people when they're sick. You know why that is? Because we have a for-profit system. Where cancer is a good thing in their eyes because it's revenue. Fills the beds. The more sickness we can have, the more pain, the misery, the better the outcomes. It's amazing, amazing stuff. I got an email during the break. Ask Governor Corporate how it's possible to save a negative amount of money. Only thing I can think of is to write an IOU and put it in the piggy bank. Thanks, Keith. I appreciate that. And the truth of the matter is, you know, most working people, they've struggled. They're having a very hard time. And, you know, the IOU thing takes me back to George Bush. You know, who ran around with his filing cabinets going, you know, down in the basement, there's nothing but filing cabinets full of IOUs. IOUs everywhere. Not that those IOUs were backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government. They were just pieces of paper with IOUs. And, you know, again, you know, how is it possible when families are struggling to make ends meet, pay the bills, put food on the table, get clothes on their kids' back? How do you save out of that? You know, one of the greatest scams ever perpetrated on the working class of this country was the 401k. This idea that, oh, you can take some of your money and you can put it into an account and we'll match what you put in. But we're going to give you wages that aren't sufficient enough for you to take any bit of it out to put in there because you're going to have to feed your kids and you have to provide clothing and all that kind of stuff for your family. So we're not going to have to contribute because you're not going to contribute. I mean, to me, that's great. And then we're going to have collapse after collapse after collapse so that the criminals on Wall Street can steal half of it every so often. I mean, that's beautiful. How do I get a gig like that?
And we'll use that in lieu of defined benefit retirement funds. It's a win-win. You're exactly right.
You got to love it. You got to love it. And I do. Because at some point, I'm hoping that, you know, you wake up, people are going to wake up one morning and go, you know, I got screwed. Who am I going to blame? You know, kind of like Jerry Seinfeld. I got screwed. Where do I go? Go after the big criminal on Wall Street. You know, I'm really hoping something comes out of these investigations. I know there's not going to be anything that comes out of it, but I'm hoping. Anyway, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What do you think about this? Financial Awareness Month, Education Month, good thing, bad thing? Back after this.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
If you want to know how the economy is doing, don't bother checking the Dow Jones average or tracking the unemployment numbers. Instead, consult the spiritualists.
Not the tarot card readers or those who have extrasensory perception and commune with the supernatural, but the people of crass commerce who deal in liquid spirits, i.e. booze. Despite our nation's relentless and depressing jobless recovery, or perhaps because of it, spirits are on the rise. Overall sales of liquor were flat during the Great Recession, but popped up by 2.3% last year to a total of more than $19 billion. Within that general number, however, lies a more telling economic indicator. Consumer spending on the cheaper stuff is down by nearly 2%, while the super premium goods had an 11% hike in sales in 2010. This sales data is consistent with the ongoing decline in working people's incomes. They're in a downward spiral that leaves them shopping for even cheaper buzzes than two-buck chuck, even as the affluent few are trading up to single malt scotches and boutique bourbons. Then there are the imbibers at the tippy top of America's economy, the Wall Street bonus babies and your billionaire class. They enjoy a constant liquidity, showing few ups and downs on the booze index because, well, because they're always rich. These swells buy spirits from the locked cabinets of exclusive liquor dealers, taking home a case of, say, the 2005 Domaine de la Romanée Conti. It's $4,000 a bottle. Perhaps the redundant use of the name Romanée Conti doubles its price, but if you have to ask what it costs, you're in the wrong zip code. This is Jim Hightower saying, yeah, times are hard for most folks with no relief in sight, but I'm sure that you take great comfort in knowing that those at the top are always in high spirits, don't you?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.biz.
Official supporter of Palin Santorum 2012, The Rick Smith Show.
The devil, I guess, has put up an exploratory committee running for president, our buddy Rick Santorum. And to be honest, whenever I think of Santorum, I think of this clip. This is one of those moments where I go, this is why this guy shouldn't be president.
An AK-47, the rifle of choice for terrorists in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is a vest left over from the Vietnam War. It's the protection we were given when we deployed to Iraq. This is modern body armor, made for today's weapons. The difference is life or death. Senator Rick Santorum voted against giving our troops this. Now it's time for us to vote against him.
You know, you go back to that whole thing in Iraq. They voted against, you know, sending the body armor. They voted against a lot of that stuff that he worked on. This is what really grabbed me.
All of you tonight is not to put on a uniform. Put on a bumper sticker.
You know, is it that hard? Is it that much to ask to put on a bumper sticker to help me win over the troops that we were sending over to Iraq? This guy's just not, I don't know.
I'm asking all of you tonight is not to put on a uniform. Put on a bumper sticker. Is it that much to ask? Is it that much to ask to step up and serve your country?
Serve your country. Put a bumper sticker on your car. What do you think of that? Put a bumper sticker on your car. It's great.
Well, I do remember because, you know, I was heavily involved in the 06 in that campaign, and I remember the last month. He absolutely went off the deep end.
He's fighting?
In the last 2 weeks, he made the claim that if he's not elected, it would hurt the security of the United States.
He's fighting to make America America again.
I guess he thought he needed a Hail Mary because he looked at the polls and he was getting his butt kicked. And I got to tell you, I would have never thought a month out that he was going to lose by 17. I mean, there were some predictions that it was within 5 points a month out, and he just totally got annihilated because he went off the deep end.
He did. He absolutely did. Speaking of, Santorum, because he really is off the deep end, especially, he's one of these lay theologians. I remember him saying he's never actually read the Bible. He read stories about it. So like a good Catholic, I mean, the truth of the matter is, when I was in Catholic school, we didn't actually read the Bible. We read a whole bunch of stories about them. Like the cartoon books that we said, the stories of Dusty and Buddy. Dusty was a Catholic, and Buddy was not. And there was their hijinks, you got Buddy always trying to get Dusty to eat, meat on Friday.
Actually, in real life, Rick, we all ate fish on Friday because the local grocers realized that the Catholics couldn't eat meat, red meat, so they all got fish, and all the mothers, whether they were Protestant or Catholic, bought the fish because the local grocer had a lot of it and it was a reasonable price.
There you go.
I used to love fish on Fridays, and I was not Catholic.
You'd be a good Catholic. And maybe you'd be crazy like this, whatever. See, there are times in the country where I go, sometimes I agree with the religious kooks, and the whole war on Christmas thing is lost on me, because I'm a happy holidays guy. If I see somebody that I don't know, hey, happy holidays. Have a good season, whatever. Hope whatever it is you do is joyous. I don't need to inflict my belief structure on anyone else. I'm just not how I am. But I, during Christmas, I did get a whole bunch of people who gave me some really angry, Merry Christmas! I said Merry Christmas! I got a whole bunch of that. So I guess Easter is going to be the new attack zone. And I'm sure Bill O'Reilly is going to go ballistic when he hears this story. In Seattle, a teenager was volunteering at an elementary school. And, she brought her, a basket of Easter eggs, and she was going to, hide them or do whatever, hand them out or whatever. And evidently one of the teachers told her not to call them Easter eggs, but to call them spring spheres. And I'm going, what? They're spring spheres. Now, here's the whole Easter thing is lost on me anyway, because I'm not quite sure how Jesus being nailed to a cross and dying has anything to do with colored eggs, chocolate bunnies, and, hiding Easter eggs, hiding eggs around the yard. I'm completely lost how that happened. Not quite sure. Just like I'm not quite sure how the tree in the house, with the presents, I'm not quite getting that. I get the whole
Santa Claus and the whole bit.
Yeah, I'm not getting the whole Santa Claus. Maybe Santa Claus brought Jesus down the chimney. I don't know. I wasn't there. The book doesn't tell it that way. But some of this craziness. Maybe this woman just did it just to poke at these people. Maybe there's some people who like to just poke these extremists. And if that's the case, good for her. But at the end of the day, I'm sure this is going to turn into a lawsuit because someone's rights were violated by not calling them Easter eggs. They're spring spheres. And what I find really interesting is we have all this moral outrage about spring spheres and Merry Christmas, and yet we got people who, espouse these values that don't follow the teachings of their faith. And I looked at the story by Reuters yesterday that said 98% of Catholic women use contraception, other than the natural way. Now understand, natural family planning, which is Catholic for hope and pray, only accounts for about 2% of the women in the Catholic Church, according to the survey, and that's pretty much across the board. It doesn't matter what faith you are, they find 97 to 98% of all women are using contraception. And this is why you have this massive attack by organized churches on women's rights. This is why the Republicans are going after women's rights, because who wants an empowered female class? We got those workers under control. We got them where we want them, under our thumb. Now we got to get those uppity women. Who told them they could leave the kitchen, put shoes on?
Well, you joke about it, but growing up, there were some big families in our community, and they did tend to be Catholic. Unfortunately, I believe the wife and the husband followed the rhythm method, which
is hope
as
and
we
pray.
All know, doesn't always work.
It's hope and pray.
They had a lot of kids.
Had a lot of kids.
And they were lucky that most of the time the father had a decent job.
I go back to when my mother worked in a nursing home, and there was a guy in there. I'll never forget him as long as I live. He told me he had 19 kids. 19 kids. And I go, you had 19 kids? How'd that happen? He goes, we didn't have television. I mean, there's no, is that a joke? I don't know.
Probably not half serious.
I mean, you know, 19 kids. But, you know, back then you could have 19 kids. You needed them to work the farm, I guess. Which, you know, kind of makes me think about one of the comments on one of the blogs I read today about education, that, you know, you got these greedy teachers who, you know, Pennsylvania's education system was set up, you know, to educate the kids during the winter and then get them out to work on the farms. I'm going, really? Where? I don't think I know any kids who work on the farms. But, you know, it is what it is. But back to this war on women's health. And we're seeing it coming to Harrisburg. There's gonna be some bills coming down the pike. This House Bill 574 introduced by State Representative Matt Baker, basically just attempts to sweep all of the freestanding abortion care providers, under these really, really extreme regulations. And basically put reputable people under out of business. So, you know, again, they can't make it illegal. What they're going to try and do is make it impossible to get. And, look, I don't know anybody who's out there jumping for joy going, yeah, we want abortion, yeah, bring them on. I don't think you see the abortion chant at the football game. Doesn't happen often. And I don't know anybody who is rooting for them. I don't know anybody who's out there going, what we need to solve the problems in this country, more abortions. Now, I could make the argument that, you know, on the conservative side of the aisle, if their parents had a little more foresight, maybe we wouldn't have a lot of the problems that we have today. But I'm not going to, because that would be wrong. But at the end of this, these are the people who want to destroy the rights of women to have a voice. And I'm not going to stand idly by and allow that to happen, because I've got two daughters. Yeah. And I don't want them forced into a back alley. I don't want them to end up going to some scumbag like that guy in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. who, I got to be honest, if it was me, I'm putting a bullet between his ears. Now, I'm not in favor of the death penalty, not for society, but I understand a person taking their own justice in their own hands. Or as Linda Thompson said, and you got to love our mayor here in Harrisburg.
But again, our police officers can't do it all. We need more vigilantes out there watching and protecting themselves and guarding themselves.
Yeah, we need more vigilant vigilantes.
Wrong word to use.
I'm sure that was just a...
You need citizens to be vigilant. I would agree with that.
Yes, I know.
Vigilantes, not so much.
She said it, not me. But yeah, at the end of this, you know, I've got two daughters that I worry about. And I don't want them forced into a back alley. I don't want them forced to go into some scumbag like that guy in Philadelphia. I don't want that. I hope they never get into a situation where they ever need it. I hope they make the right life choices. I hope that, you know, they protect themselves every way along the line. But at the end of the day, if they get into a situation where that's it, I want it to be safe, legal, and infrequent. Now, there are parts of me that say I could make it illegal. I could envision it being illegal if you're willing to make sure that child is cared for from cradle to grave. If they have health care, they have education, they're fed. I'm okay with that. But all I see coming out of Washington are slash and burn. All I see coming out of Washington is cutting funding to WIC, the Women's, Infants, and Children's Fund. That, to me, does not give me the warm, fuzzy feeling that I would hope to get.
And again, the problem I've always had with part of the pro-life movement is that all too often it's just all about bringing every pregnancy to fruition. And once they're born, oftentimes they're forgotten. And to me, they then become not pro-life but pro-birth, and there's a big difference.
Yeah, as soon as it's popped out, bad heck with that kid. Or as Tom DeLay likes.
We had those 40 million children that were killed over the last 30 years. We wouldn't need the illegal immigrants to fill the jobs that they are doing today.
Yeah, we'd have all the cheap hand labor we could ever want. And that's what it's really about to them. It has nothing to care about birth. They don't care about children. cheap labor. That's what it's about. We're back after this.
Just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes, where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just apply for workers' comp, and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happy!
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight, The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. And now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., our good friend Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, what's going on?
Well, okay, I guess the first thing that's going on is the Tea Party is furious with the Speaker, and many Tea Party people voted against the Speaker today on the budget resolution, and it is not pretty. Now, when they do the overall resolution, which is due April 15th, that's the broad outlines of the budget, he'll probably get more people because it's essentially it's the Republican plan.
Yeah, how much of this is just grandstanding, these T-twits, you know, deciding they're going to, you know, make it look good back home?
Well, basically, I think it is, but I think that they knew that if they voted for him, it was not going to look so good. And so I think you're right. They're all worried about, you know, when you get to Congress, you begin to worry about the next election.
Yep. And start making those money calls because you know, the Tea Party pockets are only so deep.
That's right.
So now the big fight, the big fight is going to be this debt ceiling. I mean, and that's where they're going to, where most of my Tea Party friends, they're staking their ground. We're not giving this time. We gave last time. They tell me, no, not this time.
Well, the debt fight is very interesting because officially we're sort of out of money around the 16th of May. But if you pull around with some of the statistics and that kind of thing, then what essentially begins to happen is that you move it to almost the first week in July. Now, it looks like the last day of legislative session when both the House and Senate are in is probably either the 24th or 26th of June, whatever that Friday is. And that's the day that they're both last scheduled to be a joint session. They have got to do something about passing that debt limit that day.
And what are you hearing? I mean, I know outwardly they're saying, you know, the Tea Party people are saying, no, they're not going to do it. And the Republicans are, you know, flapping around like a fish out of water. But what are you hearing on the inside?
Well, what we're hearing on the inside is that that Boehner's party is going to drive a very, very hard bargain, and that there's sort of a coalition in some regards, very liberal Democrats, very conservative Republicans or Tea Party people, who the liberals are saying, we're not going to vote with all these spending cuts. We're not giving in. The Tea Party people are not giving in. It's going to be a very hard fight.
Yeah, because I got to be honest, you know, the more I see, the more I'm convinced we don't have this grand spending problem like the mass media keeps shoving down our throats. What I'm seeing is we've got a revenue problem.
Well, we do have a revenue problem, and what's really interesting is even the folks on the revenue side, who look at it, say, hey, you know, you can really solve a lot of this by increasing it. In fact, the president today, when he met with Erskine Bowles and Senator Alan Simpson on the Bowles-Simpson Commission, said, everybody is going to have some pain, and it's unfair to have the upper 2% not have any pain.
Yeah, I mean, but their pain is a lot different than the rest of our pain. Their pain of paying a little tiny bit larger portion in taxes is a lot different than a guy who's swinging a hammer for a living having to work three more years.
That is for sure. And in fact, the Bowles-Simpson Commission recommended that people who actually do harder work get to have their Social Security at an earlier age.
You know, there's something. But at the end of it, you know, I know people who are, you know, pushing that 67 now, and it's a climb to get to the end of the road. So what came out of the meeting with the president and our good friend Alan Simpson?
Well, that was it. I mean, basically they said that he is going to really push to make sure that those Bush tax cuts that go away, and then we go back to where things were at before.
So tell me about the DREAM Act. What's going on here?
Several members of Congress, and I don't know the exact number, but it was senators and House members, Democrats, wrote a letter to President Obama and said that they do not want the INS going after students who are in school, who are immigrants, who would be part of the DREAM Act. In other words, if the DREAM Act, which didn't pass that Saturday in December, would have passed, they're trying to get the legislation through again. And so what they're trying to do is tell the INS, don't go after those people. Let those students stay in American schools.
So what the INS should be doing is going after those employers who bring those folks.
Well, of course, these are students that grew up in the United States their entire life. They came here before they were 12 years old or 13 years old, and then actually were educated in the system. And now they're paying for their education. They're doing, you know, that kind of thing. And then the INS goes after those kids. That's the wrong group. You're right. It's the employers who are now bringing in people who want cheap labor, not educated kids who parents came in perhaps illegally, but the kids are still here.
Yeah, but I think those kids are going to help make the situation much better as opposed to allowing these employers to keep exploiting cheap labor into this country. It's just insane.
I mean, when the DREAM Act, Tony, I remember, Tony, Rick, I'm just looking at my friend Tony. When the DREAM Act actually was the day that they were trying to get it to pass, they had a picture of a guy who was a graduate of NYU Dental School, and he was not going to be allowed to practice in this country because his parents had brought him here illegally.
That's just nuts. Just nuts. Last thing, what's going on with Secretary Clinton?
Well, she basically went over to talk to our NATO allies, and she said, we cannot pull out of Afghanistan. Now, of course, there's a lot of debate about that, but if we stay in Afghanistan, she said, we have to stay until it's stabilized. In fact, the Progressive Caucus today have put a bill forth saying, let's get up Afghanistan as part of the budget issues, but she is holding the party line on that.
So we're either going to stay 1,000 years or get out.
I guess so.
Amazing.
Ruination of many empires.
There you go. Absolutely. Ellen Ratner, I appreciate your time. Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you.
All righty. And now to find out what's going on around the block, what do you got for us?
Yeah, apparently, Rick, Tom Corbett has won the first battle in the adult basic insurance money battle. A judge will not stop the administration of Governor Tom Corbett from using money that in the past had helped pay for Pennsylvania's shuttered health care plan for low-income adults. Commonwealth Court Senior Judge James Kelly today denied a motion to order the state treasurer to hold on to Pennsylvania's annual deposit of money from the 1998 settlement with major cigarette manufacturers. The lawsuit filed last month alleges that the tobacco settlement money set aside for the plan called Adult Basic was unlawfully diverted to other purposes in the past. The case lists 75 plaintiffs who were covered by the Adult Basic until Corbett ended it February 28th. Kelly didn't explain in a one-page order why he denied the motion. The suit is still pending and asked the court to force Corbett to resurrect Adult Basic. Some bad news coming out of Commonwealth Court for those on that Adult Basic. We're talking 42,000, but the sad part about it is there were another 400,000 people waiting to get on that list, Rick. And apparently, as of now, they have no coverage.
Die, baby, die.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the question begs, where do those people go? Where do they go? I guess they wait for health care reform to take effect. Report coming out about Bob Casey and the money he has raised. He's raised about $1.1 million in the first quarter of 2011. Critics have been known to ask Senator Bob Casey, what has he done since taking office in 2006? Here's one answer. He has raised a considerable money. As he seeks re-election to a second term, Casey will start off the 2012 election cycle with about $2.1 million. He has raised $1.1 million in the last 3 months, according to a Casey spokesman. With 23 seats to defend, Democrats consider Casey to be one of the most likely safest in a presidential election year. However, the gloves are off since the Supreme Court ruling for Citizens United allowing independent groups to pour millions into campaign advertising. Casey campaign will file the figures with the Federal Election Commission by tomorrow's deadline, according to a spokesman. I would guess that as of now, I would say he's fairly safe, although the Republicans, if they want to and they can get a decent candidate, Rick, can raise a lot of money because of those. It's not even a loophole. It's just a gaping, gaping loophole as far as raising money, and money can make the difference. And there are some people who think, of course, they're on the Republican side, who think he's vulnerable. I do not. However, money can make a huge difference. Pennsylvania unemployment rate drops to 7.8%. Pennsylvania's unemployment rate continued to drop in March for a straight month and is now at its lowest level in 2 years. Although a separate survey of employees showed that payrolls dropped slightly, the State Department of Labor and Industry said today. State unemployment rate in March was 7.8%, a drop of 0.02%. It was last at 7.8% in April 2009. The state unemployment rate since the recession began in December 2007 peaked at 8.8% in January 2010. Nationally, the unemployment rate was 8.8% in March. Department said that a separate survey of employers showed non-farm payroll in Pennsylvania dropped by 1,700, leaving with Pennsylvania with a total of 5.67 million jobs, or more than 153,000 below the state's high point in 2008. Still, that was more than 100,000 higher than the state's recession low in February 2006. It's good to see it's dropped a little bit, but the truth is, Rick, in Pennsylvania, we still have a long, long way to go.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to absolutely be interesting. All righty, we're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
Yeah.
Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John. Big John, Big John, Big Bad John.
Well, I guess the question is how big was Big Bad John? Evidently, in Hong Kong, they've got a new little gimmick, I guess. They have the world's very first 3D porno film. Yep, you can wear your little glasses and you can see things coming right at you. Literally. No, I don't have my plane ticket. No. And I wonder if it's going to be like a Gallagher showing. You know, where you have to put the plastic up over your head? Just saying.
Only in China.
Well, they're going to be bringing it to the shores of the U.S. because evidently it's loosely based on a piece of classic Chinese erotic literature. Cost $3.2 million to make. It is called 3D Sex and Zen Extreme Ecstasy. Features orgies, swinging, and some very graphic scenes. Again, I'm wondering if the plastic, you know, is going to have to be there since, you know, things are going to be, you know, coming right at you. You got to wonder. I'm just asking. You know, I don't know. I've never seen a 3D porno movie on a major screen. Now, when I was a kid in Cleveland, they used to have a drive-in near where we lived that was a porno theater. And, you know, you would see these, you know, 40-foot long. Maybe I better change this.
And you snuck in?
No, you sit on the fence and I was like 8 years old. You just sit on the fence. You could watch. You know, that's what happens when you live in a poor neighborhood. Those are the kind of industries that prop themselves up. Did you see this prank yesterday that happened on GE? Evidently, these guys called the Yes Men sent out a press release basically saying that General Electric felt bad and that they were going to give $3.2 billion back. That, you know, they're sorry they took money during a time when the country was down, and they were going to take that $3.2 billion that they got, and they were going to gift it. Well, the stock, you know, dropped a little bit, fell 1.6%. people not very happy about that. And I thought it was kind of funny, and I think you're going to see a lot more of this kind of bizarre stuff, because again, it's not about investing. It's a herd mentality. You know, people, oh my God, they're going to throw $3.2 billion away. We better get our stock out of that. And it drops. You remember that one day that, you know, it was May of a couple years ago, where there was just a hiccup in the computer system and big collapse. Anyway, how many people have an iPhone? I'm actually thinking about getting an iPhone, because I got this CrackBerry that, you know, I'm just not happy with. But there's a new app for the iPhone, and you know, every once in a while I think about, gee, yeah, how much is the Big Mac and fries, and how many calories are all of this? Evidently, there's a new app called the Meal Snap. And you can take your iPhone, take a picture of whatever it is you're about to consume, and it will tell you how many calories, how much fat, how much, you know, everything. I think that is just amazing.
Isn't that a little late, though, if you're about to eat it?
Well, you know, hey, maybe, you know, and their rationale, and it's only $2.99 for the little app, which, again, you know, if you get a million people to sign up to it, and they just made a cool $3 million. But I guess the idea is that you can take a picture of it, and there'll be some social interaction. So you see, this is what I'm about to eat, and then you kind of put your little Twitter thing in there, and you put your little Facebook update, and your little Foursquare, and your little, you know, this or that, and all your friends then turn around and bust your shoes for eating crummy, and there's supposed to be maybe some peer pressure to help you not eat the crappy food that we generally eat. So hey, you know, there you go, Meal Snap, $2.99. Good stuff. Today in history, I bet you didn't know this, today was the day that Lincoln was shot. Today is the day that John Wilkes Booth, a Confederate sympathizer, fatally shot President Abraham Lincoln. Today is also the day that Sally Fields announced that today's the day the president was fatally wounded and murdered. So today will be the day that Sally Fields murders the role of Mary Todd Lincoln in the upcoming Steven Spielberg movie about Mary Todd Lincoln and the whole thing there. So good news there. Kind of took a while to get to that, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, it's what happens Sally when you stumble. Yes, she's going to play Mary Todd Lincoln.
I just can't quite. I don't know, man. You know, I hope she can handle it.
If I'm not mistaken, she was nuts, right? Mary Todd Lincoln,
Mrs. Lincoln,
off the deep end.
They say she had some problems.
I shouldn't say nuts. She was challenged.
She had some emotional problems.
I still love the Geico commercial where, you know, they got the old footage.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
It's hysterical.
Do I look
big in this?
Well, just a little bit, and she storms out of the room.
He wasn't a very good negotiator.
And he has this look on his face like, what did I
screw that up? Talking about really screwing something up, Senator James Inhofe, Republican from Oklahoma, evidently he's a pilot, didn't know it, but according to FAA records obtained by the Smoking Gun, turns out our Senator Inhofe almost killed a whole crew of people by landing on a runway he wasn't supposed to, and thinking, well, that's just my way I should be able to land. You know, I should have unlimited airspace, he said. He said, I was supposed to have unlimited airspace. And, you know, these people who were on the runway in their big red trucks and in their construction vehicles with the big red X on the runway, they were basically diving off of the runway. He got a little slap on the wrist, just a little community service, maybe a little retraining. In fact, 7 hours of remedial flight training. That's it. Can we say slap on the wrist? What happened if he'd killed somebody? And that really goes to show what they think of workers. Nothing. They're just in the way. Get them out of my way. Let me run them down. I mean, that to me just the arrogance. I can't stand it off anyway. But you know, just amazing stuff, Jake. So much interesting news this week, though. I mean, we have really had a great week. And tomorrow we're going to be continuing this discussion on the economy and continuing this discussion on where we go from here, especially when you're talking about Medicare. Because the reality is what's going on is, you know, the Ryan plan, which I really kind of think they've thrown him to the wolves. He's going to have to turn around and realize that he got pushed into this. And, you know, youthful exuberance, because he's a younger guy, they pushed him out and put him to the pack of wolves. I think he's going to get eaten.
Well, there's some Republicans already that are kind of backing away, especially Republicans in heavy seniors numbers, who have a tough time getting elected anyway. Some of them are in swing districts, and then you add in the large number of retirees. And here you have this guy who his program they're asking him to embrace, which would basically destroy Medicare. That's not good for your political career.
No,
it still is the third rail. Social Security, Medicare is still the third rail.
You know who I like? I like the governor from Montana, that Brian Schweitzer. I think he's a funny guy. Yesterday, evidently, their legislature sent them 21 of these bills that basically are just horrible. Putting cyanide into the drinking water, basically, giving corporations all of this power, all of this weird kind of let the mining industry do whatever it wants and, you know, open up cyanide gold mining operations so that basically you poison the water. He took 21 of these bills that he vetoed and put them up on a big board and branded them. I love that. Took a red hot poker and branded them. You know, and that's the kind of stuff I think we need, those kind of Democrats who are going to stand up and say, hey, look at me, pay attention. I'm going to show you the way. And I point to this other guy, Representative Joe Crowley. I don't know if you saw this, but remember the old Bob Dylan video where the guy was, you know, standing there, you know, just slinging the paper as the words were being sung? Remember that? That's basically what he did today on the floor of the House, talking about the 100 days that the Republicans have had and what have they accomplished? Where are the jobs? Where is the leadership? And you might want to check it out. I think we've got it over on our Facebook page. It's worth watching, and it's funny. I think these are the kind of people that you need, folks who are going to stand up. I love Anthony Weiner, though we got to do something with the name.
Oh, that had to be the highlight of the year when King, you remember the vote that King didn't want passed? It had to do with, was it health care for the soldiers? Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a congressman be that visibly angry on the floor. Will you lead? Will you yield? I will not. Will you yield? I will not. And his face was just, and he had every right to be. I mean, what King did was just pure political cowardice. And Anthony Weiner had every right to come down on him. Hooray for him.
Yep.
I mean, you talk about people that are standing up, your former congressman, Dennis Kucinich. I mean, he said it the way it is. He was glad that Obama took a stand on Medicare and Social Security, but he did say, look, in his speech, he didn't talk about the jobs that have left the country. He didn't talk about the three wars, which he didn't.
Yep. But again, our buddy Rick Sanitarium has put out his exploratory committee. He's going to be running for president. You remember the guy who said that, you know, if we accept homosexuals, it could lead to man-on-child and man-on-dog relations. Remember that? Remember? Evidently, he's taken his latest slogan. We're fighting to make America America again. Again. Evidently, he stole that from a pro-union poem written by a gay rights activist. So I'm kind of looking at that going, I don't think he thought that one through real well, because I don't know that he's all that favorable to the unions, and I know he's not all that thrilled with the gay rights advocates. So, again, you know, that whole fighting to make America America again, I should have thought that through again. Well, at the end of it, it is what it is. So it's going to be this election is just going to be radio gold. We hope you follow this journey with us. Thanks for being here. I want to thank our guests. We'll see you tomorrow night. Have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the good of sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy's coming to the USA.
It's The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
They're stealing down on Wall Street and in Washington, too. You know, it makes me wonder, what's a guy on Main Street to do? I've always tried to be an honest, upstanding kind of guy, but I must doubt...